Oh, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
Now the world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. And now, you've heard the right. All that's left is the truth. Guy James.
Yes, indeed. Guy James with you. And, man, have I been looking forward to getting with you folks this afternoon. I've been waiting all week for this, and I know some of you have as well, and I appreciate your being with us this afternoon. Hello from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Fort Myers, Florida. So glad to have you along today, all you folks in the area, in Naples and Fort Myers and the islands and all the way up to Sarasota. And we're glad to have everybody along with us around the world on the Internet, live on the Internet at www.theguyjamesshow.com. And, of course, the good folks over at whiterosesociety.org, Ben Birch and the gang over there, are recording the show. So if you got to do something today, well, you can always go back and hear it later at the whiterosesociety.org. And I'm so glad to be affiliated with Ben Birch and White Rose Society. Excellent outfit, believe me. My goodness. Wild week. Before I forget it, I want to tell the local folks here, if bear with me, all the national people here, I want to tell you about something going on this afternoon. There's two events taking place this weekend. Let me see here. Saturday, May 22nd, that's today, from 4 to 6 p.m. at the southeast corner of Immokalee Road and U.S. 41. You know where that's at. They're having an emergency call to stop the torture and end the occupation. This is the Pax Christi organization. They're deeply concerned that rather than bringing peace and security to the Iraqi people, the occupation of Iraq has brought violence, torture, destruction, and chaos. Go out and join them. It's at the corner of U.S. 41 and Immokalee Road. And, of course, they've got an event coming up on May 31st at 7 a.m., Memorial Day, on the beach next to the Naples Fishing Pier. And this Veterans for Peace and Military Families Speak Out in Pax Christi, Naples. We'll talk a little bit more about that next week, but I did want to get that in right away. Hey, we appreciate all the cards and letters we got this week. Email. Man, hey, forgive me. Forgive me, please, if I haven't gotten back to all of your email. It's building and building and building, and it's impossible for me to answer each and every one, but I do try. I do the best I can. The same goes for all you folks that donate to the program. I'm so appreciative. You know, this is a donor-supported program, and without your donations, your generosity, the program would not go on, and we thank you for your donations. And again, forgive me if I don't get a thank you out right away to each and every one of you. I try and do that, but it's tough to keep up with. So much going on again this week. My God, where do we start? It's just, wow. One thing after another after another. I was out on a couple of speaking engagements this week, one to the Collier County Democratic Club down at Naples. What a wild night that was. You ought to see. I hope that Democratic clubs all over the country have got the vigor and the drive and the enthusiasm of these folks down at Naples at the Collier County Democratic Club. My word. There was about 165 people or so at the meeting, and they were ready to rock and roll, and they can't wait for the election. Great group down there. And, of course, this morning we went out and spoke to another big group over at the Shell Point Retirement Community, a big Democratic club over there. Those folks are getting ready for the election and got all their plans down, and oh, my. It's a good time to be a Democrat, folks. It's a good time, and I love it. But it's not a good time for news around the world, as you know. It certainly is not. It's these people that say all they ever do is talk about bad news. Well, there's not a lot of good news lately. I love good news as much as the next guy. But stop and think about it. Lately, bombing weddings, and then denying it. The Israelis shooting missiles into a crowd of teenagers, and the United States not condemning it. Killing innocent civilians by the score in Fallujah, torturing prisoners who haven't been declared guilty of anything as of yet. You know, this isn't about politics. This is about right and wrong and common decency. something I think some of our leaders have forgotten about. Something I've always believed we held as important in the United States of America has been common decency. And that name even, you know, the United States of America to me has always been synonymous with decency and compassion and goodness. Maybe that sounds schmaltzy to some of you, but that's what it's meant to me. It's more than just the name of a country. It's a name that to the rest of the world and to our own citizens has always stood for all that's good in this world. Warts and all, we've been the best nation in the world, but all of a sudden we've got all these problems. You know, we know there are evil people in this world who commit unspeakable acts. We saw evidence of that recently. There have been elements of evil since the beginning of time, since the serpent in the Garden of Eden. If you're a Christian, there is nothing new about evil. Look back over history, and you'll find it's replete with one horror after another. Joseph Stalin, Joseph Mengele comes to mind, Adolf Eichmann, Pol Pot, Hitler, Idi Amin, Benito Mussolini, Slobodan Milosevic, just in the last century. And then before that, evil people like Ivan the Terrible, Genghis Khan, and dozens of others. There's evil in the people, in the world, people. There has always been, and there always will be evil in the world, and I don't know why. Nobody does. But the question now is, in front of we Americans, do we fight evil with evil? Do we? We're a country which, for the most part, has been able to avoid being looked upon as evil from most of the rest of the world. To be sure, our hands are not entirely clean, but they are cleaner than the hands of most of other nations, especially when you consider the mostly necessary violence we've been involved in. But lately, I sense a change in attitude by many in this once pure and mostly innocent country of ours, and I don't like what I'm seeing. Day after day, I hear people who profess to be God-fearing, good Christians exclaim that we need to kill all the Arabs before they kill us. They're evil, they holler, you know. You've heard it. You've heard the right-wing radio people screaming that. They want to kill us and take over our country in a holy war. We've got to kill them first. You hear it over and over and over again. I heard a local talk show host the other day saying that he didn't know what has happened to the American people lately. He thinks we've lost our resolve. We've become gutless. He asked, where's the attitude we had during the First and Second World War when we bombed hell out of civilians and burned down their cities because we were at war and anybody in those countries was our enemy? He posed the question, why can't we be that way again? I'll tell you why. It's simple. It's because we've evolved over the years. We've progressed as a society. The old saying that if you don't learn from history, you're destined to repeat it is absolutely true. And I'd like to think that we've progressed to the point where we can differentiate between real enemies and innocent people. And yet, I hear religious leaders like Falwell and Franklin Graham and that Pentecostal minister Robert Upton and Pat Robertson and the like, I hear them calling for the demise of Islam before they destroy us. God, what an amazing lack of faith in mankind these people have. These are people of faith, supposedly. To think that there's no solution to this problem but the annihilation of over a billion people is really beyond my comprehension. To think that way goes against the tenets of decency embodied in every major religion in the world, including Judeo-Christian values cherished here in this country. You know, I believe this goes far beyond political philosophy. It goes far beyond any nationalism or patriotism. This is a struggle for the conscience of a nation. This is a struggle between right and wrong. It's a struggle between good and evil right here in our backyard. I'm not going to be vague here, and as you know, I always say what I mean, and I mean what I say. And when I say this is a struggle between good and evil, I passionately believe that we'll have to make the choice between the two at the polls on November 2nd. The path we choose that day will decide whether we follow the great American patriots with vision like Thomas Jefferson and Abraham Lincoln and Theodore Roosevelt, or whether we'll continue down the road of ruin we're on with George W. Bush at the reins. Seems like an easy choice, and for the most part, for most of us, it is. We can only hope that those who put this man in office will do some real soul-searching and come to the realization that if George W. Bush is given 4 more years in office, he may well take this nation further down a path of ruin of which there's no return, and God help us if he wins or steals another term. I get so angry watching TV every day, watching the news. Try and watch it all, but I can't keep up with it. But the news coming out of Iraq, the news coming out of Washington is so depressing. Going to go to the phones. We got Mike in Fort Myers. Mike, welcome to the program. Do we have Mike with us?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
Okay. I heard you mention that that you thought there was a choice between good and evil in this next election with respect to how we're fighting the war on Iraq. And I haven't heard Kerry suggest that he's really going to do anything differently than George Bush is. He hasn't said he's going to pull out, which also brings me to my next point. The main reason that they got me to call is you were announcing the war protest that said they want to stop the torture over there and the occupation in Iraq. But has anyone that suggested such a thing considered what would happen if we were just to leave? I mean, Mary Poppins isn't going to come in there and get elected president. We're dealing basically with the mafia here.
So, well, I'll agree with the mafia part. The only thing is, I don't think it's all one-sided. Do you think that our government, that the Cheneys and Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz and Pearls and Bushes and all, do you think they have the good? Do you think they have the welfare of the Iraqi people in mind?
I think they have the welfare of the American people in mind.
And, oh, okay.
And the welfare of the Iraqi people is a means to that end. If it were just for the sake of the Iraqi people, I have to admit, I don't know that we would have bothered. But after September 11th, we could not be perceived in any way, shape, or form as weak. And the fact that Saddam Hussein had repeatedly violated the ceasefire agreement with the United States, was shooting at our planes on a regular basis, and we weren't doing anything about it other than firing a couple missiles back when he shot at us, basically showed that we were weak. And secondly, when you're trying to juggle all these different threats, we had to deal with all the threats we could, and with Saddam Hussein violating a ceasefire agreement, that gave us an opportunity to take care of that, because had we not went into Iraq, we would have been dealing with all of the worries over whether or not Saddam Hussein was going to use weapons of mass destruction on us, which, by the way, I understand they found a shell, a roadside bomb.
Oh,
with
that.
Sarin gas in it.
Yeah.
At least that's what they're announcing on ABC and CBS.
Right. It's been,
DPS Lion or what?
That's been debunked already. It was an old leftover shell from the Iran-Iraq war. I spoke.
Well, did it have sarin gas in it or not?
Not really.
How do you not really have sarin
well,
gas?
Well, here's how you have to. I don't know if you know anything about these weapons, but the two composite parts of sarin gas are put inside of the shell like that with a baffle in between.
And when it blows up.
And when that baffle it pops, when it's in the air and the spinning of the shell mixes it and makes sarin gas. Well,
okay.
on some of these, the membrane in there does not break, and it doesn't really make sarin gas. And even if it does, if it's been in the ground for so long, it'll only leave a trace, which in this case is exactly what it was. There was no stockpile. I spoke to Scott Ritter about this week. And Scott Ritter reports to me that they ought to find 15 or 20 or 30 of those around the country that were never accounted for, but no stockpile. So it's not like they've discovered anything at all. We knew those were there.
Well, sarin gas is sarin gas, as far as I can tell.
Well, what did it do to the people that exploded there? What did it do to them?
Well, they're getting treated for.
Yeah, there was two of them that had minor exposure, and it wasn't anything. It really wasn't anything. Don't you think for a moment, if it were something serious they had found, that they'd be blasting the Bushes and the Cheneys and all those people would be blasting that all over the news 24 hours a day?
Here's the problem, though. Saddam Hussein failed to explain to Hans Blix, which Hans Blix is no fan of the United States, as is obvious at this point. Not even Hans Blix could say that Saddam Hussein had followed his end of the obligation.
Hey, a lot of people don't follow the UN resolutions. You know, Israel hasn't.
Wait a minute, though. These were UN resolutions with somebody who actually went to war with us and signed a ceasefire agreement.
Yes, and there have been resolutions.
If you violate a ceasefire agreement with the United States, then we commence firing. And that's what we've done here.
And so you're going to tell me now that the reasons for going to war are all legit, and you believe them?
No. The problem that President Bush has is that the list of reasons to go to war with Iraq was so long that it would wouldn't fit into a soundbite. And weapons of mass destruction was the most compelling as far as danger. Now, here's the thing. You got the CIA. You got people all around the world. Kerry himself, during the Clinton administration, was saying that they've had weapons of mass destruction. The whole world said he had.
Yeah, but the problem is, the problem is back then, not what they thought then, is when the war started now. And now you've had Rumsfeld, you've had Cheney, you have George Bush himself, you've had David Kaye, you've had everybody and his brother saying, and Colin Powell, by the way, well, guys, guess what? The weapons weren't there.
But here's the problem.
But you don't believe them, do you?
Wait a minute. The only reason we know...
No, don't wait a minute. This is my show. I ask you, do you believe them now or not?
What, that the weapons don't appear to be there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe that. But here's the problem. The problem you have is, why do we know that? Because we threw Saddam out and we went in there and looked at it. We would not have known that had Saddam Hussein still been...
We already knew that.
What we have going on terror, we couldn't afford to say, well, I hope he doesn't...
Hey, you know, I don't know how stupid you think George W. Bush and Tony Blair are, but it had about 145,000 people massed down in Kuwait waiting to invade Iraq. And do you think for a moment if Saddam Hussein had had weapons of mass destruction that the Bushes and all and Blair would have risked losing 100,000 men to a nuclear explosion or a biological or chemical warfare attack? They knew they weren't there.
If he had unleashed chemical weapons, we would have lived. We would have had some casualties, but he would not have had the same effect as a nuclear bomb. And as far as we knew, he had not yet attained a functional nuclear device. That's why we went in there when we did.
Well, we had no real threat from him. His neighbors weren't worried about him whatsoever. The Saudis weren't worried.
He meant... That would have been a nice way to go.
What?
We could have just let him shoot at our jets forever and violate the ceasefire agreement.
How many Americans did they kill during a ceasefire?
Well, thankfully, he wasn't that good of a shot. How many did he try to kill?
Because they had pop guns trying to shoot at the state-of-the-art jets, and they would have never hit him, and we knew that. You know, that's a real moot point. It really is. Got to move on. Got other callers. Going to go to John in Fort Myers. John, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Guy. How are you?
Good.
You know, one thing I wanted to talk to you about lately is, you know, I'm a Democrat, and I'm a pretty staunch Democrat.
Go ahead. Are you still there? You still with us, John? Okay. John's going to have to give us a call back. Give us a call back, John. Don't know what happened there. Maybe the dog jumped on the phone. You know, you never know. Hey, what do you all think about this deal of Ahmed Shalabi this week? What do you think about that mess? I was at the State of the Union. I was there. Shalabi is sitting right next to Laura Bush, guest of honor at the... Woo, boy. Let's see. I think we got John back with us. John, you with us?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah, as I was saying before, I'm a very staunch Democrat and have been most of my life. But yet, I could never imagine a one-party system in this country. I could never imagine the Democrats without the Republicans. And yet, I hear... It's almost like it's a subtext to so many things that I hear some of these right-wing radio neocon hosts saying that, you know, and these stupid blanket statements that they come up, well, Democrats hate free enterprise.
Democrats hate
patriotism.
Right.
It's as though they're advocating the end of Democrats and a one-party system. And of course, we remember all the great one-party system governments in our recent history, like the Soviet Union, Nazi Germany, Fascist Italy, and so on and so forth. I mean, don't you hear that in a lot of the...
That is exactly what the likes of Ann Coulter and Sean Hannity and the craziest of them all, as far as I'm concerned, is a guy who claims to be a libertarian, this Neil Bortz.
Oh, my God,
those people say... You know what I heard him say this week? I don't know why. I guess I fall into the trap of him saying outrageous things. He said this week on his program that if you voted for John Kerry, you were signing your own death warrant.
I did hear that.
Oh,
I
man.
I also heard, and just to add to that, good point, I heard Sean Hannity on Tuesday on his program talk to a caller, and he asked who the caller was going to vote for. It was this, some young man. And he said he wasn't sure. And he said, well, frankly, if you're not going to vote for George Bush, I'd rather you stayed home. And he not only said that, he repeated it three or four times. This is serious. It's this serious. I mean, I couldn't imagine as a Democrat. I don't care how much behind I am behind a certain candidate, to advise somebody, well, if you're not going to vote for my man, stay home. That's obscene.
Well, that's what they want, though. They do very definitely want a one-party system. When you openly propose fascism, which is exactly where they're going with that neocon right-wingism of the PNAC group, a one-party system would suit them just fine.
I certainly do believe that, and I encourage your listeners, as you do, to listen to these people, listen to these neocon radio hosts, and hear what they're saying. And yeah, like they said in the movie The Fly, be afraid, be very afraid.
Oh, exactly.
But and there's one other point I'd like to make, and I'll make it very quickly. This reconstructing the history of the Vietnam War that these same hosts are doing in order to draw a parallel between, well, you know, we lost the Vietnam War because the people at home weren't backing the effort, rather than the real reason. I mean, they're saying, well, if you want this to become Vietnam, then you won't back the troops. I mean, it's some kind of twisted logic. And they're addressing it to an audience that mostly was not alive during the Vietnam War, who don't remember people like Daniel Ellsberg and the Pentagon Papers, and how, you know, instead of every day on the news we were hearing about what territory we had captured, or how closer we were getting to Hanoi, or how closer we were pressing for peace with Hanoi, was body count. That's what we heard every night.
Oh, sure.
Body count, body count, body count, body count. Well, you know, so what's the logical outcome? We kill them all? It rippled through the American people.
Oh,
finally,
absolutely.
That, what are we doing? And so, and these people who come and reconstruct the history of the Vietnam War, and why we were in it and why we got out of it, and go back to, and they sound like, you know, General Westmoreland's PR guy, you know, back in the 60s, saying these ridiculous things that the Americans at home lost the war.
You know, John, I spoke to a group this morning, and one of the things I told them, and I fervently believe in this, and I know some people don't like it when I say it, but it's absolutely true. If you're willing to go into battle, no matter which way the arrow points, that does not make you a hero. And if you're willing to cast your lot with just any gang of thugs who happen to be running the ship of state at the time, that doesn't make you a patriot. Certainly not. You have to be able to differentiate between supporting the troops and supporting political hoodlums like George W. Bush, who are trying to purchase, personal gain with the blood of our soldiers. That's what it boils down to.
I feel so badly, and I'm very proud of these. I'm very proud of these young people that are just, old to be young again, and kind of cast your lot to the wind and be brave enough to go to another part of the world and participate in something that is volatile and is and does present danger. I mean, you can't say enough about young people who are willing to do that. And yet, to honor those young people, you have to make sure that the older people who are committing them to this know what the hell they're doing.
Yep, that's right. And we certainly have an incompetent group. And I'm going to talk about that word a little more later. Incompetent. Thank you, Nancy Pelosi. John, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Right now, we're going to take a call from a local gentleman. Talked to him this morning. For those of you around the country and around the world listening right now, you may or may not know, you've heard me talk about the fact that we're in the heart of darkness here as far as politics is concerned, that there are one Democratic elected office holder in this whole area. And he lives on the other side of the state. The entire Lee County government here in Fort Myers, Florida, is run by Republicans. The entire Collier County, everybody, 100% of them in Collier County are all Republicans. And it's tough for a Democrat to get a foothold here. We have a gentleman here running for the county commission for the first time in, I don't know, a long, long time. Going to be running for the county commission as a Democrat. He's got an interesting story to tell you. His name is Clyde Bowles. Clyde, I'd like to welcome you to the program.
Well, thank you, Guy. Hello, and it's good to be with you.
We we got to talk a little bit this morning, and I mentioned a couple of things we're going to ask you on the program. Let me first, I probably don't have to tell our local listeners this, but tell our the rest of the audience around the country that Clyde was a Republican and is now a Democrat running on under the Democratic banner, and is to my knowledge, well, there's one other, Mr. Neal, running for Congress. Just a couple of Democrats in this whole area running for running for office. Clyde, what caused you to change parties?
Well, you know, I've been a Republican for 30 years. I grew up in a Democratic family, but I registered originally in college as a Republican. I think that was because it was the late 60s, and most kids back then used to do the opposite of their parents. But I got to tell you the truth. My mother, I called her after I changed party, and she dropped the phone and then made me swear I would never change back.
All right, Mom.
Yes, good Mom. But anyway, there are many good reasons for changing party. In an area like Southwest Florida, I think it's important to understand that for 15 years we've had five county commissioners elected in a primary. Those primaries are normally, historically anyway, low voter turnouts. I think everybody understands that. It also favors Republicans because historically they are easily elected during primaries. Well, some weeks back I learned that one of the people running for the District 4 commission seat was a city councilwoman from the city of Fort Myers, and she was a Democrat, and she changed her party to Republican. And I just, at that point, had a really inspirational feeling in my heart that I would not allow a primary to make the decision of that important office again in Southwest Florida. I'll give you a simple example. Maybe this will be easier for people listening that don't understand to better understand what I'm saying. 2 years ago, I ran as a Republican. I finished second in that race against two other opponents. In that election, 68,000 people cast votes and decided who the next commissioner would be. Just 2 months later, in November, during the presidential race, 170,000 people voted. Now, the point should be made very strongly, and people should understand the motivation here, and that is this, that the Republican Party in Southwest Florida does not represent a true majority of all the voters registered to vote in this area. And the consequence of that is because they have always failed to find any competition during a primary, they've always elected their representatives to represent the needs and future desires of everyone living here. And I honestly could not allow that to happen again. There were other reasons. I had some time ago decided in my own mind that I could never again vote for Bush. I have a mother who depends on Medicaid, Medicare, I'm not sure which, but the point is, when they passed the Medicare bill and then wouldn't even let the people administering it negotiate a price that they had to buy it at whatever was offered, that was the first thing. The second thing, with the Bush family being so predominantly involved in oil, certainly I look at the gas pump and I see that our price for gas has doubled in just the time he has set in office. Well, I'm sure that is not an unhappy situation for the Bush family and their relatives and friends, but it certainly is a very unhappy situation for the average person, including people living here in Southwest Florida.
Oh, absolutely. You know, for those of you that don't live in this area, a lot of traveling goes on here back and forth to work. Number one, let's take Naples, for example. Naples, Florida is a very, very, very affluent area. And so most of the people that work in, you know, carpentry and contracting and also, they can't afford to live there. They live, you know, in the outlying areas, so they got to drive, you know, a pretty good distance to work every day. So the price of gasoline amongst the working folks around here and all over the country is a primary concern.
Well, it is. And I got to tell you, Guy, first of all, let me say something before I forget. I hope people appreciate the service that you're providing with this show, because we have enough conservative talk shows out there. I remember years ago, before there were TVs and before there was a Walter Cronkite to listen to on CBS, we used to listen to Paul Harvey. He used to give you the headlines at the beginning of his show, and then he would come back and say, and now the rest of the story. And I think that, in fact, that's what you do with your service here. I hope people will understand that, appreciate it, help you fund this so we can continue to have a voice for the other side.
Well, thank you, Clyde. It is important that we hear all sides of the situation, and that's exactly what this show is all about. What are your prospects for this election? How does it look to you?
Well, it looks very good because I've lived in this community 30-some years. It's the first and best chance the Democratic Party and or people and members, registered voters from all the other minority parties, have really had a real chance at electing someone who can bring balance to the county commission and create fair debate for the future of Lee County. You see, one of the things that I am campaigning on is the fact that we are destroying the natural beauty of Southwest Florida. Now, people who come down as tourists and people that enjoy our beaches may not fully appreciate what I'm saying, but every year in Southwest Florida, we cut down 1 million trees. We destroy wildlife habitat, and we're draining water recharge lands that are so vitally important to that future resource. And every day, 62 new families move in to Lee County, Florida. And every one of us have found ourselves sitting in one of those parking lots that our elected officials affectionately refer to as roadways and highways. And the point I would make here is this. If I were to ask one simple question of my community, and I'm sure there's other communities around the United States probably feeling the same kinds of pressure. I know Vegas and a few other cities do have the same growth rates that we do.
In Vegas and Phoenix.
Yes, they do. And the question is, do we want to become another Miami? And I think the answer would be a resounding no.
Absolutely.
I think that a lot of people want to preserve the natural beauty of Southwest Florida. We're the federal government spending billions of dollars to restore the Everglades, and we have a lake just north of there that is known all over the United States as one of the best bass lakes in the United States, and that's Lake Okeechobee.
Yes.
All of the waters that fall on these lands that are so critical to those ecosystems are in jeopardy at this point, and development, chasing the almighty dollar, has only one interest, and that's making more money. My campaign represents not only for Democrats a good step in the right direction to create conversation that might lead to a better way of dealing with growth or potentially stopping rampant, unbridled growth from occurring that is destroying everything we love. The point needs to be made that there are things in life that we treasure, and if we ever hope to pass those on to the children of Southwest Florida, let alone future generations around the United States that have enjoyed the beauty of Southwest Florida, then we in Lee County and Southwest Florida must stand up together and say enough is enough. And party line is not going to be the issue.
No.
My opponent changed from being a Democrat to Republican, so I changed from a Republican to Democrat. But I balanced the scales. I thought it was a patriotic act because many people told me I would be the front runner in the Republican ranks. But the point is, this is not my election. Obviously, I'm the candidate. But the point is, this is an election for the people. And when you exclude 100,000 people from making those important decisions for the future that they will enjoy, then something's not America. You see, I've always thought of myself as an American first. I served 3 years in the military during Vietnam. I have volunteered too many times my personal time to different activities for homeless veterans, for food drives, for those who needed help. And I have always been willing to do that because I knew it was the right thing to do. And when it comes to running for office, they make you select a party. Well, first, let me say I'm proud to be a Democrat. I know I can wage the kind of campaign that the voters in Southwest Florida, one, will be able to identify with and understand, and they can support it. And party line will have very little to do with it the day of November 2nd.
Well, you know, you're exactly right, Clyde, and for a moment, folks, yeah, forget the party. What Clyde is trying to do here is to bring some balance to a situation we have here in Southwest Florida, and actually all over Florida, but particularly here in Southwest Florida, where we have awesome growth. And we need some balance between development and stewardship of the land, the air, and the water, and the wildlife. There's no balance right now. The development is like a runaway freight train, and literally the politicians are in the back pocket of big development, and that's where we need the balance.
Well, it is. And let me give you an example of something that is critically wrong with the rules and regulations that govern how we grow as a community. There are many landowners in eastern Lee County, east of I-75, and anywhere in the United States you can look on a map and see that most of the development that has occurred I-75. But the western side of I-75 is pretty much built out in many areas, and now they're looking into those wetland areas that wildlife has enjoyed for centuries. But here's what they're doing that people don't know about, or if they do know, they may not understand the significance of. There are landowners have 1,000, 1,200 acres that have historically owned land that set underwater 6 to 8 months out of the year based on our rainy season. And I don't know if people around the nation can understand that, but the point is we have a huge amount of rain that falls during the summer months, and it sheet flows out of the area slowly. Now, if any rain occurs in Lee County today and falls on our land today, it takes 5 years for that water to find its way down to the aquifers, which we depend on as a water resource. The point, though, is this. These landowners understanding that those wetlands, if they're identified as wetlands, cannot be developed like normal lands. So the consequence of that is this. They are ditching and draining those lands so that when the rain falls, that in the past sit there for 6 to 8 months, working their way into the ground, now drain off in a two-week period. If you look at NASA photographs, looking at the plumes of pollution that are now expanding further and further each season into the Gulf, you can see the trend that has occurred over the last 30 years. Now, this is not what we as community residents had hoped for, because there's only so much water to go around. There are many people pulling at it. This Everglades restoration program is going to require redirecting a lot of the water that we already enjoy through that avenue, which is very necessary for that success. Lake Okeechobee is in a poor state of repair at this point because of all the pollutants that have been dumped in Lake Okeechobee, and all of that water is coming down the river, the Caloosahatchee River, into Fort Myers, and it is probably at the highest polluted point it has ever been at for us to work with, to clean up, to use, and those amounts of water that are coming down the river are going to become more and more restricted. We are putting in so many orange groves in southwest Florida because we don't have as much problem here with frost as they did upstate. The consequence of that is each full-grown orange tree uses 16 gallons of water a day, and that's more than most average people use in their homes. So the point is the water resources are so much more important than anyone has ever probably understood, and or you have to understand government has not even started addressing those issues. But when we find out that it's a serious problem and we get into water rationing or restrictions beyond where we're at this point, then it may be too late to solve the problem. We need a county commissioner. We need interested people who believe these problems are worth solving and can still be solved to get involved in this campaign. And that doesn't mean it's just for Democrats, because even though I believe Democrats fully understand this issue, I think Republicans and other party members in this community and throughout southwest Florida can also understand what we're facing.
They must. They must start to address it. They must. Clyde, we're going to have to go. I've got a board full of people here waiting. I invite you to call in from time to time, and I'll be talking to you.
Well, I appreciate it.
Let us know what exactly is going on in the campaign. Is there anything that we can do to help your campaign? Count us in.
Well, you've got it, and I hope you keep up the good work. And people, support this man. He needs your help. I'm going to send some money to him. Let's see how many of you other folks out there will do the same thing.
Thanks very much, Clyde.
All right.
Appreciate it. Yes, I'll tell you what. If he gets elected, and we'll get him elected, it's going to be interesting to have a Democrat as county commissioner here in southwest Florida. It'd be something highly unusual. Betty in Fort Myers. Betty, welcome to the program.
Thank you. This is Betty Gambridge. I'm at Shell Point Retirement.
Yes, Betty. Can you speak up just a little, my dear?
I said this is Betty Gambridge. I'm at the Shell Point Retirement Community.
Yes.
I came and spoke to our Democratic Club this morning. I wanted to thank you. You were very well received, and we enjoyed it very much. And really, that's all I have to say, Guy, and I wanted to say hello and thank you again for what you did for us.
Well, thank you, Betty. We appreciated coming out to the club. It's always good to talk to a group of fervent Democrats and beautiful community you live in out there, and we very much appreciate the chance to come out and talk to you and your participation in the show. And I know we've got a lot of new listeners today as a result of coming out.
Very good.
Thank you, Betty.
You're welcome.
Going to go to Gordon in San Francisco. Gordon, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi. Welcome to gloomy, cold San Francisco. It's really cold
Oh, wait, who was it I heard? Tom DeLay this week called it San Francisco? Is that what it was he called it? He made some disparaging remark about San Francisco anyway.
Well, oh, really? I didn't hear that. I know that the protesters against gay marriage were chanting that.
Oh, is that it? That's probably where he got it. You know, Tom DeLay is such an ass that, you know, you don't know what's going to come out of his mouth anyway.
Anyway, I don't know if you heard, but, you know, Mike Savage.
Oh, my.
Who's here in San Francisco. He called Brown versus Board of Education one of the worst things that ever happened to this country. Did you hear that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he also called for the bombing of a random Arab capital. I guess my question is about the radio business. Now, this guy apparently has 6 million listeners, is the third most popular talk show host. My question is, and when he called for the bombing of a random Arab capital,
right?
He got lots of calls saying, "Right on, Mike, right on."
Oh yeah, that's the scary part. It's not that there's one nut sitting there on the radio. It's the legions of his followers out there going, "Right on, Mikey." Mikey Wiener is his name, by the way.
Right. Wiener. Yeah, he's Jewish, but he hides it. He pretends he's Christian on the show. My question is about the radio business. When I turn on my car radio, does that register somewhere? How do they know how many listeners you have?
Well, you don't. They take surveys. I mean, you know, they can't tell by turning the radio on and off. They do surveys every now and then. And people, you know, and the odd thing is, I've done radio for a long time. Never one time have I ever been surveyed about my radio listening habits. But, you know, all sorts of... you know, they talk about the book coming out. It comes out ever so often, and they gauge by what share of the market you have and how many people normally listen to the radio, and then they gauge about how many you have. Now, on the radio, on the Internet now, we stream and broadcast live. We're on 1200 AM here in Fort Myers. We can tell exactly how many people are listening on the Internet because of the bandwidth that is used. So we can tell how many minutes each of you are listening and exactly how many of you are listening and whether you've logged on or off and how long you've stayed and the whole business.
Okay. So forget about streaming. So as far as the radio goes, you know, Rush supposedly has 18 million listeners. They do surveys?
Yeah, they do surveys, but, you know, you've got to, one thing you've got to remember about Limbaugh, for example, and they don't like to talk about that a whole lot, but Limbaugh, I've heard estimates that at any one time there are 2 to 3 million people listening to his program, never 18 million. In the course of 3 hours, maybe 10 million listened, but they listened to a little bit and then somebody else tuned in. So there's never 18 million listeners. And I think his 18 million comes over the course of a week.
I see. Okay. Well, thank you for educating me in this business.
There's always a way to, as we say, massage the numbers in the media.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for that information. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Gordon. Going to go to Julio in Naples. Julio, welcome to the program.
What's going on, guy?
Hey, a lot today. A lot, my friend. How are you?
I'm fine. Hey, man, I was calling about the right-wing radio. Hey, I listen to it, so there's nothing else to listen to down here. Personally, I believe that Sean Hannity, that show, that's about the funniest thing, you know, you can listen to every single day. I mean, just the fact that these people have the power in the country, and they're sitting around and whining as if someone else is in control of the country and someone else is in control of the major political offices. But that's not even what I called for. I actually wanted to call to use your forum to thank George W. Bush. You know, over the last 2 months, it has been really evident what he has done is that he has brought back dignity and respect to the White House and to our country. You know, I mean, starting, first of all, with the way he was elected, you know, the election scandal. And then we go to, you know, September 11th and what went on with that. Weapons of mass destruction. Now Abu Ghraib. His whole National Guard thing, the Chalabi thing, which if people were to investigate further and what was going on with that, people would be really disgusted. The fact that we've been giving this guy $300,000 a month. Okay, a month.
Not bad, huh? And you know the funny part, Julio, is Bush is giving a speech at some college the other day, and the title of his speech was "Choose Your Friends Wisely."
Right, exactly. You know, but yeah, like I said, I mean, the only problem with bringing dignity and respect to the White House is that he also brought, you know, their close relatives shame and dishonor. And Eric, one last thing I wanted to say: the last time I called your show, I was talking about logic and how really the right wing has used like this twisted logic to manipulate their followers. Okay, like, and I'm looking at these pictures. You know, I don't think I've called you since these pictures have started coming out, and I just find it shocking the people who are for this war. Okay, they can look at a picture of a child, okay, with his limbs blown off and his entire family dead, laying in a rubble. You know, that used to be his house, and that's just collateral damage. That's okay. But, you know, looking at pictures of some prisoners being, you know, sexually tortured or with bags overhead, oh, no, you know, that's some big horrible thing. And that's the thing, is it is some horrible thing, but it's just the logic of it all. I mean, you know, the child, you know, without any arms or legs and his entire family dead, that's okay. But, you know, the other stuff, oh, you know, that's embarrassing. You know, we can't have that. And that's just the whole logic of this administration. It's just like what are these people thinking about? And it's like what you said. I mean, is that what you want representing your country? I mean, I would love to ask one of the Bushlickers who are listening right now that, I mean, do you really feel proud of what this man is doing, about what your country is doing right now? I mean, can you really sit up there and hold your head up high and say, yeah, I'm an American right now? I mean, with what's going on, I mean, it's insane what these people are doing, and the fact that, I mean, it is shocking to me that we haven't stormed the White House yet and thrown this man into the ocean.
Oh, I'll tell you, Julio, I was out talking to some folks this morning, and I told them, I got a little chuckle out of it, but I'm deadly serious. If you can still be behind George W. Bush after all the things that's gone on in the 3 years of his administration, you've got some kind of a serious character flaw.
Yeah, can I just say one more thing? Sean Hannity, he has this habit of saying, I mean, can you imagine being in the position of having to hope that the country does bad, you know, that you're in the position that if it's good for the country, it's bad for you? Well, what about being in the position of having to defend what's inside those pictures? Okay, that is a position that I would not want to be myself in. Okay, and the fact that these people are doing it, and now the talking points is, well, you know, just don't pay too much attention to it. It's being overblown. You know, just don't worry about it. It'll all go away. We get the picture. No, I mean, it's just insane. And for anyone to believe that that was just some type of isolated incident and that these are just some kids who are looking to have a good time, I mean, you have to be absolutely stupid to believe that.
That defies logic, that's for sure.
Take it easy, guy. Have a good day.
Got to run, Julio. Thank you very much. Good to have you with us. You know, I thought I heard Tom DeLay someplace. Tom, are you around? I guess not. Oh, it is Tom DeLay. Hey, Tom. Glad to have you with us, Tom. I tell you, that was House Majority Leader Tom DeLay. Is he a clown or what? First of all, Tom DeLay is the moral equivalent of a snake. Let me just say that right off. Tom DeLay, if I were a Republican, I would be totally disgraced and ashamed to have that man in my party. House Majority Leader Tom DeLay blasting Nancy Pelosi as she said that that Mr. Bush was incompetent. Now, the funny thing about all that this week was, DeLay and his friends didn't talk about the actual subject there, the incompetence. They just started throwing stones at the messenger. They couldn't refute her comments about him being incompetent, because incompetent, well, in spades, he's incompetent. Guess what, Tom, and of course Ed, what's his name, Gillespie of the RNC, both of them whined for the last couple of days. What was it he said here? DeLay said Nancy Pelosi should apologize for her irresponsible, dangerous rhetoric. He goes on to say she apparently is so caught up in partisan hatred for President Bush that her words are putting American lives at risk. Yes, he did say that. let me tell you, let me give you some words that put American lives at risk, Mr. DeLay. Bring them on. Remember that? You remember the stooge who's ahead of your party saying, bring them on? And they did bring it on. And almost 800, if not over 800, of our soldiers are dead today because this fool stood out and said, bring them on. And you've got the nerve to stand up and say what Nancy Pelosi says was getting our soldiers killed? Are you crazy? You must be out of your mind. Anybody that votes for Tom DeLay has got to be out of their mind. What could you be thinking? People, please, if you are a right-wing Republican, call me and explain to me how a rat like Tom DeLay has got any... How does he get the nerve to say this about Nancy Pelosi after Mr. Bush said, bring him on? She said she was not going to apologize. She said his activities, his decisions, the results of his actions are what undermines his leadership. My statement are just a statement of fact. You know, Nancy, the only quarrel I've got with you about that statement you said about him being incompetent is that you didn't say it several months earlier. And Tom Daschle, where are you? Mr. Daschle, where are you? You're a leader of the Democratic Party. You going to make Nancy Pelosi stand out there on the point all by herself and some of our Democratic friends in office? You need to get up there and back her because you know she's right. Is she ever. We're going to go to Amanda in Georgia. Amanda, welcome to the program.
Hi, Guy. How are you doing?
Great.
How you doing, Guy?
Absolutely great today.
Good. Excuse that. I don't know what that was. I'd like to make an appeal to the American who's listening to this show, whether you be libertarian, Republican, Democrat, independent, whatever. Let's look beyond partisan politics, people. This has gone way beyond. Do we really want to stay in a country led by Mr. Bush? And I'm using that word loosely, Mr. Bush. I mean, I just can't say President Bush. The things that has happened in that prison, and I'm sure things have happened in other wars. We didn't have digital cameras. That doesn't make it right. Go all the way back to just common sense will tell you. When it all at the end of the fighting, at the end of the dying, it comes down to the negotiating table. It does, Guy. It comes down to the negotiating table. And, you know, my daddy's bigger than your daddy type of thing mentality. Go it alone. The only thing that's going to make America safer is to be a beacon of light and hope to other people who want to look up to us. That's the only thing. And if you feel like that you're living in a safer place since Bush took office, if you feel like that we don't need a breath of fresh air to clean out the corruption from the outing of a CIA agent, from this thing in Abu Garuda, however you say it, prison, from being misled to this turkey that's over there that we gave millions and millions of dollars to for bad information, and as far as intelligence, well, we've got bad intelligence, all right, and it starts right at the top with George W. Bush.
Absolutely.
Bad intelligence. I'm saying put away your partisan politics and think like an American for just a moment. I mean, John McCain is a Republican. I'm not so far leaning left that I wouldn't cast a vote for John McCain.
He's an honorable man.
He's an honorable man. I'm speaking, people say, well, George W. Bush is a good Christian man. Well, I'm the daughter of a Baptist minister. You know what? My dad's a Democrat. And you know what? He doesn't see anything Christian-like about the way Mr. Bush stands next to Mr. Rumsfeld or anything else.
So you're one of those PKs, huh?
Yeah, I am a PK.
That, to all of you who don't know that aren't Protestant, we always called the preacher's kids
preacher's
PKs.
Kids.
Yeah,
well, yeah, you, I sure am.
You PKs have a reputation, you know.
Well, we're not real soft-spoken, are we?
That's right.
Now, my father was about, well, he pastored for over 30 years, and my father says, you know, he can't see where this guy's coming off as, you know, doing the will of of the teachings that he believes in, not what my father believes in, but by his by what Bush himself says.
Yeah.
That he, you know, nothing to back it up. So I'm appealing to the people who are listening, the right-wingers. If you feel safer, and how could you? If you're more proud of that flag than you have ever been, and how could you be? If you're, you know, how could you be proud of, like, Tom DeLay? How could you? You know, you say, well, we had Bill Clinton. Now, it always comes back to Bill Clinton. My goodness, Bill Clinton looks like a conservative to this spending,
oh, yeah.
This
yeah.
spending spree. You know, when a child is born today, Guy, they get a check for $37,000 handed to them if they're born at 12 o'clock, 4 o'clock this afternoon.
Yeah, get a bill for 37.
They get a bill,
yeah.
Not a check, but a bill.
Hey, Amanda, I got to run. We got news.
Okay, and it's good talk to keep
hey,
supporting.
Thanks for calling. I hate to cut you off, but we've got the news
no
waiting.
Problem.
And my producers give me a real dirty look.
Y'all keep supporting the guy, James.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, we're going to pause for news. Everybody on the phone, hang on, because I do want to talk to you. We're going to be right back after the news. You hang on now, you hear?
Restoring the liberal media, the Guy James Show. Top of the hour, and the news is next. This is WPTK Pine Island Center, the station for Power Talk. Power Talk 1200.
OPEC hints that it might bail out the West. I'm Joan Bennett. The president of the oil cartel says record oil and gasoline prices are not OPEC's fault, but the oil-producing nations may take action next month to bring prices down. ABC's Kate Bowie at the Foreign Desk.
A statement from OPEC says it's deeply concerned with the recent jump in oil prices, but the group has made no decision to increase oil output, at least not yet. Another more formal meeting to discuss that will be held next month. There is pressure on oil producing nations to increase the number of barrels of crude produced each day. But industry analysts say even that won't make the price fall all that much. They say strong demand and politics have pushed up the cost.
President Bush says he's working on a plan to get gasoline to the pumps more quickly, and Mr. Bush today called on Congress to pass his national energy strategy.
It called for tax incentives for fuel-efficient hybrid vehicles, more exploration in places like Alaska, and greater use of ethanol, a reliable source of energy produced on our farms.
Senator John Kerry's immediate solution to high prices?
We should divert oil that's now being used to fill our reserves and bring it to the market so that we bring down prices. But short-term steps are just stopgaps unless we have a long-term plan.
An explosion outside the home of a senior Iraqi interior official left 5 people dead. A deputy minister was wounded. A group linked to al-Qaeda has claimed responsibility for the car bombing. Palestinian President Yasser Arafat accusing Israel of carrying out war crimes in Gaza. Israel began launching attacks there after 13 of its soldiers were killed. Today, a suicide bomber detonated his explosives near a Jewish settlement in the West Bank. An Israeli commander and 3 Palestinians were wounded. This is ABC News.
I'm a hypocrite. No, I'm not a vegetarian that wears leather shoes. You see, I used to smoke pot, and when I found pot in my kid's room, I confronted him about it. It would have been easier to look the other way and not feel like a hypocrite, but I'm his dad, and he's not allowed to smoke pot, period. It might be hard, but to help your kid with their problem, first you have to get over yours.
Action, the anti-drug.
Hypocritical? Yeah, that's me.
For more information, visit theantidrug.com or call 1-800-788-2800, sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Toyota owners, tired of paying high gas prices? Well, how about paying nothing? That's right. Toyota is giving away free gas for a year to 12 lucky winners. Plus, 1,000 more will win $50 fill-ups. Just come into your participating Toyota dealer to enter the sweepstakes. You'll get the very best competitively priced service performed by Toyota-trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and ask about our May tire and service offers.
No purchase necessary. Ends May 31st, 2004. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 year old with valid driver's license only. Void in Hawaii. Official rules at Toyota.com/owners.
No, ma'am.
Oh, well, you're 5. What are you waiting for? They've built a nest outside your window. See?
No.
You will when you climb 15 feet up this ladder to get rid of them. Take this insecticide and broom and send those stinging meanies packing.
What if I fall? I could get hurt.
Oh, you know about gravity already. You're so smart. Oh, go, 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 go. The hornets are waiting.
Shoo, get away.
Try not to swallow too many.
Get away!
Knock that nest out of the park.
You wouldn't treat your child like an adult, so why put them in adult seat belts? If they're under 4 foot nine, they need a booster seat.
I can't see! Are they biting me?
Oh, that's so cute. No, honey, hornets don't bite, silly. They sting.
Ow!
For more information, go to boosterseat.gov. This message brought to you by the Ad Council and the U.S. Department of Transportation.
I don't remember ever not having allergies. Spring and fall were the worst. I was always a runny-nosed little kid. Because of my seasonal allergies and allergic asthma, I often couldn't play outside with my friends at recess. I wanted to play on the soccer team, but I was just too miserable to be outdoors. Growing up, I tried over-the-counter allergy medications, but they either didn't work for me or they made me so sleepy I felt out of it. I was starting to think I'd always have to suffer outdoors. But you know, I finally got smart. I saw an allergy specialist and I got the right treatment program. I even became a nurse. And today I help kids with allergies so they won't have to go through what I did. Get smart like I did. See your allergist or personal physician. My name is Melanie Schell and this is my true story. Call 1-800-842-7777 for more information or go to smartaboutallergies.com on the web. This has been a public service message from the American College of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology.
Which oak grows well beside a river or stream? And what's a great tree to plant on a dry hillside? At the National Arbor Day Foundation website, arborday.org, you'll find out what tree to plant where. See how trees can add value to your home and cut your energy costs. Go to arborday.org for whatever you need to know about trees.
Plant a tree today for all the world to share.
That's arborday.org.
If you have diabetes, you already know you could develop kidney failure, lose a limb, or go blind. But did you know that 2 out of 3 people with diabetes actually die from heart disease or stroke? Lower your risk of heart disease and stroke by lowering your blood sugar, blood pressure, and cholesterol. Ask your doctor to tell you more about the link between diabetes and heart disease, or call 1-800-DIABETES. A message from the American Diabetes Association and the American College of Cardiology.
God bless America. The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
Now the world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. And now, you've heard the right. All that's left is the truth. Guy James.
Back at you. And, hey, before I go any farther, I want to thank the folks at Random House. I get most of the bestseller books now, especially, you know, when we interview folks. We've got, in the next couple of weeks, we've got Ambassador Wilson coming on. We've got Gorg Vidal. We've got, who else? We got, well, anyway, we've got a lot of people. And they always send the books. Calvin Trillion, best-selling author of Tepper Isn't Going Out, he's got a book out called Obliviously on He Sails. It's the Bush administration in rhyme. Again, that name is Calvin Trillion. Let me give you a quick sample out of this book of the poetry this guy writes. It's called A Sissy Hawk Cheer. Bomb 'em now, kill 'em now, zim boom ba, sissy hawks, rah rah rah. Vietnam reverberates, we were rooting from the States. All-out war is still our druthers, fiercely fought and fought by others. Hit 'em now before things worsen, we love war, though not in person. Bomb 'em now, kill 'em now, zim boom ba, sissy hawks, rah rah rah. What a great sense of humor Calvin Trillion's got. And we'll be doing more out of this book. Like I said, it's from Random House, and it's called Obviously On He Sails. This is going to be some good reading. Hey, back to the phones. Don't want to make you wait too long. We got Michael in North Carolina. Michael.
Hey,
guy. How are you?
So good to hear from you, my friend.
Oh, good to be here. Great show so far today. You brought up something interesting. You talked about this Dashiell guy. Who is that? I haven't heard him mentioned or anything for, like, what, since the anthrax got sent to his office. I mean, it's amazing.
I'm tired of it. I'm really tired of it. And I'm sorry if I pick on Tom Daschle, but I expect our Senate minority leader to be a little more vocal, a little more in the mix than he has been. And I don't know what his problem is.
It's scary, though. I mean, you know, we've got such serious issues going on right now, and he's got a bully pulpit. He's got the ability to get on. I mean, we've got a messed up media, but he can get on. I mean,
Well, look what's happening in his own campaign. For the first time in congressional history, we've got the Senate majority leader campaigning against the Senate minority leader in his own state. Never happened before. Always been a gentleman's agreement not to do that. So Frist goes up and does that. I mean, it's a knife to Daschle's back. And I see Daschle yesterday going, oh, well, he's got to do what he's got to do.
Well, I'm sure there's some grand strategy.
Oh yeah.
Whatever. It's really frightening. Talking about good authors and books that are out, I just finished about 2 weeks ago the new John le Carré book. He of the spy, basically the spy genre of novels. It's called Absolute Friends, and man, I didn't realize that le Carré had really. I hadn't read enough, recently about how vehemently anti neocon. And this sort of plan, PNAC or Plan for the New American Century, he really was. It's really a fascinating book if you like that genre.
What's the title again?
Absolute Friends.
Okay.
It's not bad at all. I was surprised. He's the guy that wrote, what was it, The Spy Who Came In from the Cold. I guess that was his first big one way back when. But real amazing, really slams the administration. I was shocked by that. But, it's... I don't know what to tell you. I haven't called in for a couple weeks because, it's like every time I turn on the news, we get some other ridiculous photo or some story that it's almost overwhelming.
Oh, it is.
At this point.
I agree. It is. it really is.
You've got, especially these photos. This is something that amazed me because I remember back when they first opened up the camp in Guantanamo Bay. Remember that?
Sure.
And Ashcroft had basically said that the Geneva Convention does not apply to these people because they're unlawful combatants or something.
Exactly.
And I know people were talking at that time that we thought some weird stuff was going on, but of course they allow no media there, so there's no way to find out what's going on. But I mean, I suspect that there's probably been the same sort of thing that was going on in Iraq going on in Guantanamo Bay, and it's rather ironic that we complain about Cuba being so bad about civil rights and what they do, and on their own land, we're doing the same thing.
And just wait till the next time some of our people are taken prisoners.
Oh,
and we're going to whine like babies. And
that's the reason we have the Geneva Convention.
Exactly.
So when your guys get captured, they don't get brutalized.
Yep.
And right now, I mean, the Bush administration, they're so pro-military, they're doing some of the worst things possible to the military.
Michael, like I said earlier on the program today, and I talked about it in a little talk I gave at a group this morning, the fact that we're discussing, that we're even discussing the merits of the Geneva Convention is disgusting.
Oh, yeah. That's something that was considered kind of a standard, a goal that all civilized societies should at least try to adhere to. And you hear people talking about, well, it wasn't real bad torture, they didn't kill them all, and you've got people defending this. I mean, it's shocking. And you don't have that many, though. I have to admit, though, I'm surprised that there have been a few columnists that have remained quiet on this, and I don't applaud them for it because they're still idiots. But
hey, what do you think of old Tucker Carlson all of a sudden?
I've heard some things about it. What has he done that's been...
He has done a total 180 on the war.
Well, yeah, I heard something about that, but, I mean, is he going to vote for Kerry?
Well, now, it's not quite that breathtaking.
Okay.
But
he's
now against the war.
Well, whoop-de-doo. Sorry. Ted Rall had an interesting article about columnists that were, basically, what do you call them, war pimps?
Yeah.
You know, the War Pimp article.
Sure.
And basically saying they either got the biggest story of their careers wrong, you know, and basically they messed up, they fouled up, or they are tremendous liars. So either way, why on earth should they be respected or put onto these shows or interviewed? Why would any respectable organization hire them in the first place?
Yep.
They're either liars or they're idiots.
Either way.
And either way, that's not good journalism.
Nope.
So, I hear these people making the little 180s, and that's fine and everything, but, you know, the damage is done. They did their damage.
That's
right. They, in their pimping for the war, pimping for Bush, they basically took some of the heat off and didn't put the heat in the right place. They made it where the protesters went out and didn't get as much attention as they, I think, deserved. Me being one of them.
they are complicit. They are accessories to the crime.
And now they want to say I was wrong.
Yeah.
What the hell with them?
Right.
You know,
right.
They have done things that I consider, at least in my opinion, that some of the most evil things in my lifetime that have been committed.
Exactly right. And if you can make a 180 turn like that, your credibility's down. You know, for example, folks, if I ever come to you and start swearing that you need to vote for George Bush, don't listen to me anymore.
Exactly. Exactly. You're nuts.
Yeah, that's right.
You're mind.
That's right.
And, Kerry, he wasn't my guy in the primaries at all, and I fall quite a ways to the left of Kerry. But, you know, I'll vote for the guy, and I'll try to do my best. But I'll be honest, he's got so much going. I mean, let's put it this way. I would think a rock. You could run a rock against Bush right now and get 51%.
I would hope so.
I mean, I would hope so. I really would, because the war is a disaster. These jobs, the so-called job creation, even if they keep up these low-paying, bad benefit job creation, if they keep it up, they'll still be the only administration since the Depression to have a net negative record.
They haven't kept up with population growth. They're not growing any new jobs for new people.
So even if they do that, and how's this? I mean, you keep reading, if you look at the Department of Labor's number, our actual workforce is decreasing.
Yeah.
They're saying, how does our workforce decrease?
I have not read where there are millions of people moving out of the country anytime.
Yeah, go to the Bureau of Labor Statistics and look at what they write.
You're right.
I mean, of course, unemployment went down a notch because apparently there are a few people working or wanting to work. I guess they disappeared. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just in these, you know, I'm in North Carolina now, and it's not like Southwest Florida. I mean, Southwest Florida has millions, billions of dollars coming into it in the real estate industry, and the rich are flocking to it, thus keeping builders and carpenters and that sort of industry alive. I mean, basically, the main jobs in Southwest Florida are building in government.
That's right.
And financial services. I mean, that's really the three main industries outside of agriculture, which is in the middle of the state. But, you know, places like where I am and places that had manufacturing, yeah, they're getting job creation, but they lost jobs paying $15 or $20 an hour, and they're replacing them with $10 an hour.
Well,
I mean, people can't maintain their standard of living. These jobs are degrading their standard of living.
Sure.
It hurts their children's chances to go to better schools. It's increasing the number of foreclosures. Because we encourage people to consume, and then now they're making 50% less, and they can't afford that F1 or F10,000 or whatever the hell trucks are out there now.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so I mean, it's not, you know. Fortunately, I have seen some articles that in the middle of the article, after talking about the job gains, they do mention that. You'll get a blurb or a paragraph, but man, it just needs to get out there, and people need to understand that they're being, you know, that race to the bottom is not a joke, and we're not making it up.
Exactly right. Michael, thanks for your call.
Thank you so much.
Good to hear from you, my friend.
Great show.
You know exactly what Michael said about every day you pick up the newspaper, and all you folks on the phone, hang on, I'll be with you very, very shortly. It is true. Every day, you wonder, is it ever going to stop? When I go to bed nowadays, I'm always wondering what kind of a major negative revelation about the Bush gang will I hear tomorrow. Really. And it is something every single day. They don't disappoint. And when you start going through the whole list of unbelievable incompetence and failures of this administration pertaining to Bush's war in Iraq, it's really too much for a person to comprehend. And, you know, think about it. Let's see here. Going down a list, trying to think. The lack of a big enough force to get the job done. That was a mistake. David Kay and the mysterious missing weapons of mass destruction. What an embarrassment that was. The lack of cheers and flowers our troops were promised from the Iraqi people. The slaughter of thousands of innocent Iraqi people trying to be swept under the rug. The looting that took place while our military leaders looked the other way. What else? The string of never-ending lies as to our reason, the reason du jour for going into Iraq in the first place, the reason of the week. The mission accomplished statement by Bush to bring them on, bravado by our pretender-in-chief. The humiliating pictures from Abu Ghraib prison. The puny, insignificant, phony coalition Bush bragged about. The huge financial burden put on our people. The $700 million misappropriation of money from the Afghan war without getting any approval from Congress. Just, oh, gosh, we just moved. Guess what? You know, the admission of Ahmed Shalabi that, so what if we were wrong? We got what we wanted, didn't we? I mean, he actually said that. The Paul O'Neill book telling us how the war was planned from day one, long before 9/11. And then the Bob Woodward book confirming what Paul O'Neill said, and then the testimony of Richard Clark in his book confirming what O'Neill and Woodward wrote. And then the Valerie Plame affair with the obvious, terrible vindictiveness. I might add illegal vindictiveness. I can't say that word today. Vindictiveness. Used by the Bush gang. And the famous biological warfare mobile labs that didn't exist. Colin Powell's embarrassing performance in front of the UN. The patently false assertions and innuendos made by the incompetent Bush gang that Al-Qaeda and Saddam were closely aligned. Remember that? The disclosure that we're paying Shalabi $340,000 a month for giving us utterly false information. And, you know, it was totally, he was BSing the Pentagon, the CIA, and Dick Cheney and Richard Perle loved this guy. The guy that sat beside Laura Bush at the State of the Union speech, the guest of honor. You know, this list could go on and on for a long time. And one thing we haven't even mentioned is the terrible loss of American lives suffered because of the incompetence of this White House gang. And that's just a list for the Iraq War. Think about the length of the list we could compile for his domestic performance. The 3 a.m. arm twisting and downright bribery of a Republican congressman to get him to vote their way on the Medicare bill. The coercion and threats used to keep bureaucrats from spilling the beans about the actual cost of Bush's Medicare bill. The utter failure to heed any warnings pertaining to 9/11, the No Child Left Behind debacle, the loss of more jobs than any administration since Herbert Hoover, a budget deficit that stretches from here to the moon. You know, and all this in his eloquence as a speaker, too. You know, every time he gets up to speak, it's painful. It's painful for him and his audience. He acts like the proverbial whore in church when he talks. You know, Nancy Pelosi was 100% in her statement this week about him being incompetent. And I challenge any of my right-wing listeners to call in and explain away the dozens of failures this guy has presided over. He's a walking, talking catastrophe. You know, when you scrutinize this guy's adult life, it's almost inconceivable that he could have ascended to the presidency of the United States. Hell, on paper, Elmer Fudd is more qualified. And when you look closely at all the money behind him and the cabal who controls that money, then it becomes clear of what's going on here. You know, I love it when I see Cheney or Rumsfeld or Condoleezza Rice extolling the virtues of Junior Bush. You just know that when they're done talking about what a wonderful chief executive Bush is, they go into the back room and discuss what a fool the guy is with each other. They had to have figured out a long time ago that trying to explain domestic and world affairs to him is like trying to teach Shakespeare to a pig. You'd think that now and then he'd get tired of dealing with this incompetent fool. Oh, man, I can't imagine being in any one of their positions. I really can't. I'm going to go to Bill in Fort Myers. Bill, thanks for waiting so long.
Oh, boy, there's no way I can follow that act, but I'll do the best I can, guy. I want you right where you are on your soapbox with your mouth in the open position. That's what I want, and I enjoyed that very much.
Well, I you know, there's so much we could sit and... Oh, don't get me started.
Well, I heard you mention Dr. Megala earlier, in my opinion, that Rush Limbaugh is to the truth what Dr. Megala is to medicine. That's just the way. And I was especially upset this week when you think about all the people in the country that are out of work and their unemployment has run out. And Rush Limbaugh is coming up with that sham report that Senator Kerry cared so much about his campaign that they only needed one more vote to extend unemployment, and Senator Kerry didn't care enough about those families out of work to come in, and that whole thing was orchestrated and a lie.
Yeah.
And even if the Republicans had come close to losing, they could have brought the vice president down. So once again, you people that want to believe Rush Limbaugh, go ahead, but you're on your own on that one.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that was, as you say, it was staged. Kerry knew that was coming. Everybody knew it was coming, and that would have passed by 5 or 6 votes.
Oh, sure.
Easy.
The other thing that annoys me is when I hear the talking points from the Republicans that what is Senator Kerry going to do that the president hasn't already done? The question is not what is he going to do. The question is, how is he going to do it? The president went to the United Nations, and I don't have any formal education, but I know a little bit about selling, and you don't sell your idea by telling the people, you do it my way or I'll do it myself, and I don't really care what you think. And that's not what Senator Kerry's going to do. He's going to try to bring us back to where we were, where we could deal with the United Nations and NATO. And remember, do you remember who the first commander of NATO was?
No, I don't.
It was General Eisenhower.
Oh,
right?
Okay,
after World War II.
Okay.
And you want to tell me that General Eisenhower, who was most famous for getting people who are honorary to work together, put NATO together so we wouldn't be on our own, and now we got this Republican administration reversing that whole trend and putting us out there, and more importantly, our soldiers out there behind the eight ball, almost completely alone.
It's insanity. You know, Thomas Jefferson said, you know, it's important to... I'm trying to think of the exact term. It's important to respect the opinion of the world.
That's right.
And, you know, Bush, first of all, doesn't know what the hell Thomas Jefferson, who he is, let alone what he ever said. You know, he'd probably, I don't know who Thomas Jefferson would be, the guy that worked down at the local subway, I guess.
Oh,
but,
boy.
You know, Bush is that stupid. He really is. But we've poked our finger in the eye of practically every nation in the world.
Well, this big talk that we don't have to ask anybody's permission. Let me tell you something. It's not about asking permission. It's having somebody beside our soldiers that's going to help them with the bleeding, and to have somebody beside our tax money that's going to help us pay for this thing. It's not about asking for permission.
Exactly right.
Are you aware that a certain bully on a talk radio show named Sean Hannity actually ran the audio from that beheading execution?
Yeah, I did hear that he did that.
As far as I know, he's only done it once, but I would have to wonder why anybody, including you, have access to that, and you didn't put it on your show. Why does Sean Hannity have to get out there and play that on his show? Do you think we're all so stupid that we don't know that the terrorists are animals and pirates? And we already knew that. And there's a big difference between them doing something like that and one of our people doing it.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
I was also appalled real quickly that we put privates and corporals in jail for what happened to those Iraqi prisoners. I was surprised they didn't take the guard dogs and put them in jail, because they're as much responsible as these privates are.
Well,
that word came down from on high to loosen up those prisoners so that when the professional interrogators got there, they'd get the information out. And why we're going to allow these young men and women to go to prison, I just hope if we get a new administration, we're going to get a pardon for everybody from Fulbert Colonel down is going to be pardoned from any involvement in this.
Put the blame where it absolutely belongs, and we'll try and see to that. Hey, thanks, Bill.
Thanks
for your
a
call.
Lot, guys.
Thanks. Hey, someone wanted to know on the internet, can you tell us what Calvin Trillion book The Sissy Hawk cheers in and printed out on the site? It's in a book called Obviously On He Sails. Obviously On He Sails. It's the Bush administration in rhyme. You will love this book, I promise you. Going to Carl in Fort Myers. Carl, welcome.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Listen, it's tough following you in, Bill. It's tough enough following you, but following Bill is really tough. That guy's very knowledgeable.
Sure.
I wanted to talk to you about the UN thing that happened with Bush, you know. To me, I saw this coming, and, you know, I watched it on C-SPAN almost daily. And they put Colin Powell up there as some kind of a buffoon, you know. They gave him all this information, and, of course, it all turned out to be phony as heck. And, you know, I don't know what Colin Powell was thinking.
Well, I...
You know, I think he must have... Surely, he, you know, his career in the military, he surely must have asked some questions about this.
I know a lot of people don't...
The world and did this.
Well, I know a lot of people don't agree with me on this, but I did remain in Colin Powell's corner up until that point, thinking he was an honest and decent guy. And I still want to give him the benefit of the doubt, but it can only be that he's a loyalist that's loyal to a fault, and I hope that's all it is. But I really thought and expected the man to resign rather than do a performance like that.
I agree with you. I know. I think he probably is a loyalist to a fault, and but he, it was just because when I sat there and watched him give this, and he didn't even look like he was believing it.
No.
You know, he gave up these photographs of these trucks and so on and so forth. But to me, when I looked at his eyes, it was almost like, well, I don't really believe this, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Carl, I agree. It didn't look that convincing to me.
No, he sure didn't. And, anyway, thanks for your show. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks so much for calling. We depend on good callers like you to have a good program. I tell you, it gets more absurd all the time. You know, I heard Bush again this week, and Rumsfeld talking about stay the course. Hell, the Titanic stayed the course. You remember that? They stayed the course. They stayed right on the course. They had a chance to turn away from the iceberg, and they didn't. And you know what happened to the Titanic? It's nuts to stay on the course we're on right now. You know, this just shows what kind of an utter fool this guy is. God, I hate to say that about the President of the United States, but he is a fool. Stay the course? Oh, everything that's going on, that day after day after day, we're bombarded. You know, this wedding thing the other day, oh my God. You know, and it's fitting a typical pattern. First of all, the military denies it all. And then, I don't know about you, but I saw the films from out in the desert. It showed the musical instruments laying there, and the children laying there, and the women laying there. But they deny it all. And then, little by little by little, well, you know, yeah, we did find a few women. And, you know, I heard Kimmett the other day. I mean, you talk about hardcore and calloused. He said, oh, yeah, there were some women killed. I can't remember. It's four or six or what, you know. Thanks. Thanks for being a decent human being. Come on, man. I know you're a killer. I know you're a warrior, and that's your job. But come on. Please. Let me quickly read you something before I go back to the phone. This is an eyewitness that was there. The village is called Mukaradib, by the Syrian border, where all this took place the other night. And it started at 10:30. The guests were hurrying back to their homes in the small village as the party ended, as sister-in-law of the groom, Mrs. Shabib, 30, was to sleep with her husband and children in the house of the wedding party. That's a tradition. The Rakat family village. She was one of the few in the house who survived the night. This is from the London Guardian. And I quote, the bombing started at 3 a.m., she said yesterday, from her bed in the emergency ward at Ramadi General Hospital, 60 miles west of Baghdad. We went out of the house, and the American soldiers started to shoot us. They were shooting low on the ground and targeting us one by one, she said. She ran with her youngest child in her arms and her two young boys, Ali and Hamza, close behind. She crossed the field, and a shell exploded close to her, fracturing her legs and knocking her to the ground. She laid there, and a second round hit her on the right arm. By then, her two boys lay dead. I left them because they were dead, she said. One, she saw, had been decapitated by a shell. I fell into the mud. An American soldier came and kicked me. I pretended to be dead so he wouldn't kill me. My youngest child was alive next to me. The story goes on. It's a heart-wrenching story. And, you know, don't get me wrong. I'm not putting the blame on that American soldier that kicked her to find out if she was dead or not. I'm blaming the SOBs that put that young man in that position in the first place. That's where the fault lies, not with that soldier. He was carrying out orders. Where did those orders come from? You know where they came from. Going to Scotch in Punta Gorda. Scotch, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you. I want to do a little bit of criticism, if I might.
Go right ahead.
You know, the only thing that I don't like about either the neoconservatives or the real liberals, I'm glad we do have a liberal person on board here, although I'm a real right-winger, but I'm not a Republican. But the thing that gets me is both of them seem to argue personalities. They never really argue issues. And I just still do not know, and I don't think anyone can explain to me, the different issues that a Democrat would have over a Republican.
Well, it's not a matter of a Democrat or a Republican. It's a philosophy against another philosophy. And we've given George Bush 3 years at the reins of government, and it has been nothing but a catastrophe from one end to the other.
But what would have been different with the Democrats?
We'll never know. But what we do know is George Bush is incompetent and has not been able to do the job. Why not give somebody else a chance?
Now, what did Bill Clinton do when he was in there? They bombed that place for 10 years. When George Bush, number one, 42 or whatever, 41, I guess, was in there, he was the one that started the whole mess. That was almost a world power country, a number one country, and after he got finished with them, they were a third world country.
Well, and they had 10 years worth of sanctions that starved the people out, which
And that's your United Nations for you.
Well, and it also the United States government was involved in it, and Bill Clinton was involved in it, and I did not approve then, and I don't approve now.
Okay, well, that's good. Now, let me, for Bill and everyone that says that everyone should be going to the United Nations, I want to remind them that George Bush said that America will be making only one determination. Is Iraq meeting the terms of the United Nations Security Council resolution or not? If Iraq fails to fully comply, the United States and other nations will disarm Saddam Hussein. Then Secretary Powell said, we believe that there is sufficient authority in the UN Security Council resolution 1441, 678, and 677 for whatever military action might be required. It was all to empower the United Nations. And when the United Nations gets enough power, your sovereignty is going to be completely wiped out. And for these guys that want to go with the United Nations, just like Lincoln said, we're not going to get invaded by some other country. When we collapse, it's going to be from the people from within.
But here we had an administration that they yelled, oh, the sanctions, oh, the UN sanctions. And finally they said they're defending that on one end. We've got to do what the sanctions say. And on the other hand, it's on to hell with the UN. Which is it?
We never did say to hell with the UN. We went in there because of the UN. That's what George Bush said.
They were going to get a second resolution. They never bothered to do it. They just told to give the...
He already had the resolutions, 1441, 678, 687. Sure, he had them, and that's the reason he went in there. He was going to make the United Nations more powerful.
But what I'm saying is the right is trumpeting the UN sanction, the UN resolutions as a reason for doing this, that, and the other thing. On the other hand, they hate the UN.
Well, anyone who likes this country should dislike the UN. Let me tell you, right now we've had the FTA, the Free Trade Association with Canada and Mexico and us, and we've got people dying because of imported produce. We've got people dying because of the FTA, the Free Trade Association of the Americas. But nobody cares about that. And even Newt Gingrich says it's a transfer of power from our Congress to the United Nations, or actually from Congress to the FTAA. Is that what you want?
You don't think you don't take seriously Gingrich's comments. You don't think the United States is being overpowered by the UN? Certainly, you don't think.
No, we're not being overpowered. We're just what we're doing is surrendering to them. What? Just a little bit at a time. You know, there was a guy by the name of it'll come to me in a minute or two. He was a communist from Italy, Gramsci. And he said that's the way to do it, a little bit at a time. And that's what Stalin wanted to
do. Do you think there should be no world-controlling authority of any kind, every nation for themselves, and no world police?
That's the way it was wasn't it, when we were good and we didn't go over and kill other people in other countries just for the heck of it? We had a reason to do it if we did it. It may not have been a good reason, but it was a reason. By the way, all the money that we're giving away in the world, there's one country that we're giving some money to in foreign aid where torture is not even against the law. Do you know that?
Well, the way we've backed dictators over the years, I'm not
surprised.
And
that's Israel.
Yeah.
That democratic country, it's okay to torture people.
Yeah.
It's not even against the law.
Well, and
that's democracy
and
for you.
And while you mentioned it, you know, our aid, our foreign aid, by the way, we're not the number one foreign aid country in the world. I think we're about eighth on the list right now, so we're not as generous as people would have us believe.
Maybe.
Got to run, Scott. You got a whole board lighting up here full of people. Glad to hear from you today. Let's see. What am I? Better look at the clock and see where we're at here. Next up, we've got Ray in New Haven. Ray, welcome to the program.
Guy, good to hear from you. Good to hear you again. I haven't listened for a few weeks. Sorry to have missed you. And but a great show today. Even when you discuss things with somebody who doesn't agree, you bring a lot of great light into the subject. So I really appreciate that. And I was happy to hear a PK earlier.
Yeah.
Even though it wasn't one of my PKs.
Well, I had good friends that were PKs, and I cherished the friendship with them because they were always fun kids.
Very good. For those who may not know, that means preacher's kids.
Sure does.
And I want to remind your listeners, especially new ones who may not be familiar with it, that there are some great sites from preachers like myself pointing out not just the crimes but the sins of the Bush administration. This is I'm 67. I've always followed the national government, and this is definitely by far the worst administration, the most immoral administration that we've ever seen in America. And I hope to God that Christians aren't going to be fooled by them this November, and they're going to recognize, as I would say on my website, my new website, one of them is called JesusNoRepublican.org, and I add that to my former site, still very much alive, LiberalsLikeChrist.org. The one site, JesusNoRepublican.org, points out why Christians have no business being Republicans. And the other site, liberalslikechrist.org, point out that Jesus was a most liberal person, one of the most liberal leaders of all history, providing you understand what liberal means. And you don't get your definition of liberal from conservatives.
Definitely
except
not.
Except the conservative's definition of liberal is like asking a communist to define capitalism or asking a capitalist to define communism.
Right.
You don't go to the enemy to get the definition of anything. So,
hey, Ray, I want to tip you off to something and tip the audience off to something. Since it's you that called today, Ray, and I know you do have the give us your website again. LiberalsLikeChrist.org.
LiberalsLikeChrist.org.
Okay. A little later in the program today, in the final hour of the program, I'm going to touch upon a subject that may interest you, and I'll just give you a hint. We won't let the cat out of the bag or anything here, but you, Ray, in particular, will be interested in this, and I know a lot of other people will. We're going to talk about, briefly, about Psalms 33 and Psalms 37, and don't let the cat out of the bag what those are. We're going to talk about those two things and how they are germane to the problems in the world today, and particularly the problem the United States is involved in right now in Iraq.
Well, great. Everything you've covered. You've covered so many of the issues. You're cataloging problems with this administration. It's really mind-boggling.
Oh, you know, Ray, I made that big, long list up a few minutes ago as checking them off down here, and I know I've missed half of them.
I was thinking about it because on my site, for example, one of the issues...
Is it off the elite liberal media? They're pounding us with that. All of the right-wingers, they've all got their marching points, their talking points lately, the liberal elite media.
And they're not telling the truth, and they're responsible for the deaths of all these American troops over there. And if you're not supporting the president, we're not patriotic.
Right.
And frankly, it's beginning... Let me put something out to you. What's happening is beginning to scare me. Because basically, if you're really listening to it, it's a call for censorship. as a call for just what happened in Soviet Russia and in Nazi Germany. We have to have the media supporting the government, and if it doesn't support the government or the troops and the war, we have to do away with it. And, you know, there's going to come a point where we're not going to get this truth that's out there. And we're not going to get the full story. You know, they don't like the releasing of the pictures of what's going on, but if we didn't have the media telling us, these atrocities would be continuing.
I'll tell you what, John, if we didn't have the Internet right now, that story would have been DOA. Now, the Internet has kept that story going. The Internet has brought a lot of these stories to light and pushed them forward where the right-wing media would have killed those stories.
And our government and these people want to have censorship.
Oh, yes.
I mean, let's face it, you're talking about a administration. Basically, I don't know if I've been listening to you describing Bush and Rumsfeld and the gang that's up there. And let me tell you, what you're describing, if you stop and think about it, is war crimes.
Oh, I've been way too kind to him, John.
Well, it's war, you know, if the situation, you know, what we're describing that was done to these people in the same prison is no different than what Saddam Hussein did to people that we were going to liberate.
War crime is a war crime. And, you know, John, they say, well, what if, you know, I heard someone on TV yesterday saying, well, what if we had some bomber in Times Square and he had a nuclear device and we had to get the code to shut it off? Would we torture him? Would we be justified in torturing him? Well, maybe so. But, you know, for that one instance, for every one instance where it might be, and I question that might be, you'd have 99 instances of people like John Ashcroft using and abusing a rule to torture people.
I still have one question for you.
Certainly.
Guy. In order to win in Iraq, there are two things that we must do. One is we must win militarily. Two is we must win the hearts and minds of the people we're setting out to liberate. Question, are we accomplishing either one of these goals?
Certainly not.
If we're not accomplishing these goals, how can we possibly succeed in Iraq?
Well, there's only one way that we're going to conquer Iraq, and you and I both know is if we take all the weapons at our disposal and go in there and annihilate those people. And, of course, that's wrong, maybe not wrong in the eyes of this administration, but as this course, you know, they're talking, John, about staying the course. If we stay on the course we're on right now, winning the hearts and minds of the Iraqi people and the Middle Eastern people is an idea that's patently absurd.
Well, then, you know, then we're doomed to failure.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the quicker, you know, one of the three things that happened in Vietnam, Lyndon Baines Johnson realized he was doomed to failure. He didn't win. Richard Nixon finally realized we were doomed to failure. He pulled out. Now, we realized, you know, with all the rhetoric that occurred in Vietnam, we could not win. How many people's lives, how much money are we going to expend on something that we cannot accomplish in this mission?
Man, that's the $64,000 question. I guess with inflation, it's the million-dollar question nowadays, John. It seems unwinnable to me at this point. It does. And, you know, they talk about cutting and running. I just think it would be a matter of getting our heads straight and deciding a new course. Certainly staying the course on what we're doing right now is ridiculous.
Then what you're talking about is foolhardy. So the people who support George W. Bush need to either come up with answers or realize they're supporting a lost cause.
Absolutely.
And this is the message that we need to get out there. And, if something doesn't work, then we need to stop.
That's a fact.
And, you know, I thank you for the time to be able to say this. And if I'm wrong, I would like some right-winger to come on to your show and tell me where I'm wrong. Because at this point, none of this makes any sense to me. And to lose people's lives and send our troops to a needless war is senseless.
Absolutely.
And that's not supporting the troops.
Well, John, as you put it so well, it is not, and of course has to change. Thanks so much for your
call. Thank you for the time.
Going to go to Rhea in Bonita. Rhea, welcome to the program. Are you there?
Yes. Hello?
Yes.
Yes. I just want to let you know and your listeners that Bush has angered tremendously the voting Cuban population in Miami recently. I don't know if you heard that he tried to enforce more of the embargo with not allowing any kind of help or monetary or anything for Cuban families to send to their island, people down there. And that has made him very, very angry and is turning the Cuban population that was once very Republican against Bush.
Well, you know, Rhea, there's a situation right there. I mean, I'm a student of history, and I try and understand and particularly investigate the motivations of policies and procedures we have around the world. I have never understood the Cuban embargo, particularly over the last dozen or years or so. Here we are, still today, enforcing an embargo against a tiny country 90 miles off our shore with a dictator. Who's he's getting old, and he's no threat.
Days are numbered.
Yeah, he's no threat to the United States. Although the other day I heard his doctor say he might live to be 140.
So can all of us.
Yeah, but anyway, here's a guy that we've still maintained this embargo right through some administrations that I've known and loved, and some that I didn't. And because he's a communist, by God, and we just can't be, we can't be having that. Meanwhile, halfway around the world, we're doing a land office business with the communist Chinese and can't get enough.
Exactly.
Will somebody please explain that to me?
Well, Castro is a socialist more than a communist. He hasn't arrived at the communist level yet, but he definitely is a socialist and in control. And like you said, they want to control the whole thing with the media and everything else. And that dictatorship, which is not what we approve of, but it has worked for them. It was an island that was totally out of control, and he had to take it over somehow under his control to keep the people in order and educate them and get them housing and food and everything else that they need. And that's how he accomplished it.
Well, but the real problem with this embargo and our stance toward Cuba over the last 40 years now is a small band of people in Miami who are from Cuba and want to have that country back for their own good, and therefore our policies have remained what they are. And in fact, our policy toward Cuba is just plain nuts, in my opinion. But nobody asked me.
By the way, I had the pleasure and honor of having met McGovern, Governor McGovern, and he had told me that he had tried very much to understand the Cuban pharmaceutical and scientific advancements on the research of cancer and all that, and he had tried to open up the venues and the, you know, at least the media or something to go down there and explore and look and interview these people and talk to them, and nobody listened. Everybody shut them down. They thought he was, full of jokes or whatever. He wasn't serious, and they wouldn't give him a chance. And he had opened the door with Mr. Castro to let people come in and pharmaceuticals and doctors or whatever and interview these people that were making advances on something as delicate as the cancer treatment and cancer cures. And they wouldn't listen to him. We wouldn't listen to him here, and we shut the doors right in his face.
Yep.
Now, that is wrong. That is the man is trying very hard to get the world together, and we're slamming the doors 90 miles away. I mean, it doesn't make
sense. That's right. Rhea, thanks so much for your call.
Thank you.
Very insightful. Hey, a lot of you may know about this, and some of you may not, and I do want you to stay tuned for our last hour of our program, because we have a lot to talk about today. How many of you know who Granny D is? I know who Granny D is, and a friend of mine sent me a note to be sure and mention an article by Granny D that's on truthout.org. That's truthout.org. Go there and read the article called Soil of Good Democracy by Granny D, a woman that has a great perspective on what's going on in the world right now. She's a very elderly woman. She says, let me read you just a couple of minutes of this article before we go to the news at the top of the hour. She says, my life has been long and grand, and I'm about done with it. But I'm, that's so Granny D, the way she writes. But I'm determined not to say goodbye to all of this until I can go to my rest in the soil of a good democracy. The good news I bring to you from 1,000 places is that Americans who have resisted voting in the past do want to vote this year. They're motivated, and even in places where they're afraid their votes will not be fairly counted, they are determined to vote anyway. And here's some more good news. You do not have to believe the polls that say the election will be close. It will not be close. The pollsters do not reach the many millions of people who do not have regular phones. Many of the people I met are in housing projects, in workshops, in music clubs. They have only cell phones or no phones at all to answer pollster questions. They all have strong opinions on the election, and they're all prepared to vote. That is the story everywhere we've gone, from the Overton and Little Haiti neighborhoods of Miami to the Great Lakes. And she goes on to say, now, friends, it is time for us to do our duty to tell the truth and to hold back nothing. For it is not enough that people want to vote. They must have good information. And she goes on to tell, you must run good articles off, print them off by the hundreds, give them to bus and train stations until they ask you to leave. Then you must come back with more. The masses of our neighbors are not getting the truth, and we cannot expect them to vote wisely unless we wise them up ourselves. No one can do this for us. No presidential campaign can do more than spread around a few slogans and accusations. The news media will not do it for us, and they are no longer in the truth business. There is only you and me. We need to do a massive voter education project starting right now. I'll have many of these little flyers on my website soon for you to print off, Granny D. She goes on to say, I am as nonpartisan as I can manage in a time when the truth itself is partisan. I am for any candidate or party who will uphold the Bill of Rights and the Constitution, who would never use lies to lead us into war, who will use our common resources for the benefit of our children and all of our people. A wonderful article. Finally, let me say, she says, what many of you sense, the Iraq War is over as of this week, as a fiction of the invasion's moral premise is so now completely disrobed. There is nothing for the U.S. to do now but to come home, and that will begin soon. Further, we're seeing the self-destruction of the big lie Bush war machine. The soul-searching that will now begin in America will be an important time for all of us, a teachable moment if we progressives are up to it. Absolutely true. We're going to break for the news. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. You're listening to Guy James.
Democrat and proud of it, Guy James.
I think Bullet wants to go outside.
Then take him, son. Sure, he's a Great Dane, meaner and 100 pounds heavier than you. Sure, he's strong enough to tow an SUV, but you're a Peterson, and at four, you're a man. So take Bullet's chain and wrap it around your wrist twice.
Like this?
I use both hands, but hey. Now show him who's boss. Let him know who's top of the food chain.
But I'm afraid I could get hurt.
I'm afraid I don't understand. Just keep him away from that cat.
Come on, boy.
You wouldn't treat your child like an adult, so why put them in adult seat belts? If they're under 4'9", they need a booster seat.
Daddy!
Make him spit that cat out this instant!
For more information, go to boosterseat.gov. This message brought to you by the Ad Council and the U.S. Department of Transportation.
Democrats, unite. This is the year and now is the time. Your voice must be heard in Southwest Florida. Join hundreds of other concerned American patriots as we combine our energies, our talents, and our resources to announce to all of Southwest Florida that our presence will no longer be ignored, our voices no longer denied. Our party needs us now. Our country needs us now. The Collier County Democratic Club is leading the way, rising on the tide of determination. Join us at our exciting monthly meetings and learn what you can do to make a difference. Call the Democratic Hotline today at area code 239-434-7754 or log on to www.collierdemocrats.org. Again, call 434-7754 or log on to www.collierdemocrats.org. This is the year, and now is the time. The time to start thinking about tomorrow. The time to start thinking about joining the Collier County Democratic Club. This has been a paid political advertisement, approved and paid for by the Collier County Democratic Club, Bill McMahon, Treasurer.
Coming up.
news is next. This is WPTK Pine Island Center, the station for Power Talk. Power Talk 1200.
A worldwide attack on obesity. I'm Joan Bennett. An arm of the UN is joining the fight against weight gain and poor nutrition, says ABC's Barbara Britt.
If you're battling your own bulge, you're far from alone. Now the Health Agency of the United Nations, the World Health Organization, has launched a global campaign against obesity, blamed for a surge in cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, and even some cancers, causing over nearly 34 million preventable deaths worldwide. So what does the World Health Organization recommend? Eating less sugar, fat, and salt.
So what if a preteen doesn't want to dress like everyone else in low-riding, belly-bearing jeans? 11-year-old Ella Gunderson of Kirkland, Washington, says a clerk at her local Nordstrom's told her that's the look.
People are trying to push little kids to, like, grow up faster. And they grow up fast enough.
Ella complained to Nordstrom's in a letter, company spokeswoman Denise Anders.
She was frustrated, and it's really our salespeople's job to be able to educate our customers on the different merchandise that we carry.
A suicide car bombing in Baghdad killed at least five people and wounded a senior interior ministry official 5 days after the head of Iraq's governing council was assassinated in a similar bombing. BBC's Caroline Hawley in Baghdad.
This is certainly a fear of people working for the coalition. Many people working for the coalition have been killed in car bombs over the past few months, usually policemen in Iraqi security services. But over the last week, we've seen these two apparent attempted assassinations of senior government officials.
Picketers filled the sidewalks in front of SBC Communications in San Antonio today, day two of a four-day strike by the Communications Workers of America against SBC over health care and job security issues. This is ABC News.
The notion of a 40-hour work week is several hours short of reality. Working long hours is a given when you run your own business, no matter what business you happen to be in. With that kind of schedule, the last thing you want to worry about is office supplies. So from paper to computers, pens to coffee, Sam's Club has the products you need for any business office. Sam Walton created Sam's Club to give small businesses the purchasing power of big businesses. That means when you shop at Sam's Club, you get everyday low costs on the supplies you need to run your office. And since it's tough to be away from your business during the day, we offer special gold key hours, early morning hours from 7 to 10 when we're open exclusively for business members. Another time saver? Our click and pull and fax and pull services let you order ahead at samsclub.com or by fax at no extra charge. We know that time and money are important to you. Helping you make the most of both is why we're here. Sam's Club. We are in business for small business.
Good afternoon, Guy James fans. Enjoying the show? Hey, we're glad to hear that. Here's an example of one of our future shows. Yes, you heard right. That could be the sound you hear or don't hear from the Guy James show soon. Here, let's listen in one more time. The Guy James Show is America's most powerful weapon to counter the poisonous assault coming from the right. The Guy James Show is America's only commercial-free democratic talk radio show. But without the support of loyal listeners like you, this important national voice could be lost. Instead of this,
there's never been a president of the United States who deserved to be impeached more than George W. Bush. Day after day, I think I'm in some sort of a dream when I think about all the incredible lies and downright treasonable acts that this guy and his minions have gotten away with over and over and over again. He still sits in the Oval Office. You know, it's amazing. It's incredible. It's unbelievable. You know, there's no word strong enough to describe the contempt I feel for these people.
We could hear this. The Guy James Show, based in fact, produced with pride and delivered with passion. Fellow Democrats, this show is entirely supported by loyal listeners just like you and me. The need is critical, and the time is now. Log on to our website at www.theguyjamesshow.com and show your support. That's www.theguyjamesshow.com, where all that's left is the truth.
Welcome back, and hey, call us. You can use our nickel even, 888-602-7500, 7501, 7502, 03, and 04. And locally, you can call us at 479-5540. Always glad to have you join in the program. If you're one of those folks over on the right and you'd like to call in and give us an idea of all the wonderful things that George W. Bush has accomplished for the United States of America over the last 3 years, please do so. We'll do it in a logical and rational manner. I'd be glad to listen if you've got anything to say, what the man has done, the concrete. Don't want any of this feel-good stuff. Of course, we don't feel good, so you couldn't hardly say that. I just want to take a moment. I talked to Ray there in that last hour from up in New Haven, Connecticut. And I don't have to tell most of you how foolish and irresponsible I believe the Bush administration to be. And I've left no doubt as to where I stand on that issue. You're not wondering where I'm coming from, are you? I'm certainly you're not. But I do wonder if we, us, America, our government, our military, the White House gang, I wonder if we've learned anything since 9/11, since the Afghan War, since the Iraq War. What have we learned? I know I've learned a whole lot, along with many of you. I've spent a lot of time studying and learning and reading all I could about those conflicts and this predicament we find ourselves in right now. So my question is, are we safe? Are we reasonably safe from harm? We spent the last 50 years building up our military, developing the most deadly weapons on the planet and seemingly millions of them. The biggest, most modern navy with submarines containing monstrous nuclear capability. We built the finest air force in the world with fantastic deadly attack force only dreamed of a couple of decades ago. We've got Star Wars style weapons like lasers and those remote control surveillance planes. We've got satellites roving above the Earth capable of reading a newspaper from out of space. Yeah, that's what they actually say. We spend about, $300 billion a year on defense? But the question is, can we defend ourselves? Do any of these exotic, expensive, devastating weapons guarantee our safety? I mean, back when we had MAD, you remember that, Mutually Assured Destruction, that was our aim. Those weapons kept us and the Russians from going at it several times. Cooler heads prevailed. But now, what government are we fighting? What country are we arming ourselves against with these massive stockpiles of deadly weapons? And again, I ask the question, are we safe? I don't think so. Not one of those state-of-the-art weapons I just mentioned can protect us from a nuclear bomb packed in a Volkswagen in Times Square, a minivan, a Piper Cub airplane, or even a canoe with a bomb in it. You know, all of those weapons I just mentioned are totally useless against a terrorist bomb. Our eyes and ears and human intelligence is probably our only protection against such an attack, and even those elements might not be adequate. But I want to present some thoughts to you, and let me know if you think I'm totally off base here. I'll depend on you to let me know. If you're a member of the Christian faith, and a believer in the words of the Bible. You may know of Psalms 33. Really, it doesn't matter if you're a Christian or not. The wisdom of that passage in the Bible is clear to everybody that reads it. And it says, quote, "A king is not saved by his mighty army. A warrior is not saved by his great strength. A war horse is a vain hope for victory, and with it, with its might, it cannot save." So you ask, what can we do to be safe and secure? If all of our weaponry still leaves us vulnerable, what can we do? Well, the answer to that, I believe, is also in the pages of the Psalms. Psalms 37 says, "Trust in the Lord and do good, that you may dwell in the land and have security." Now, it's not my intent to be given a Sunday school lesson here. You don't even have to be a religious person to get the meaning of that passage. Even the most illiterate, atheistic cynic can understand clearly the meaning of those words. You know, go ahead and leave out the spiritual part if you need to. Boil it down to simply, do good that you may dwell in the land and have security. It's enough to understand just that simple passage. The message here is that we can no longer afford to hold our military might over the world as a threat to their security. We're the only superpower, and the only real threat we face today is terrorism. We've gone into why that particular threat exists in recent programs, but in a nutshell, it exists in large part because of mistakes we've made against other people on the planet. I've mentioned our support of the Shah of Iran and Marcos and Pinochet and others. The unvarnished truth is that the United States government has committed crimes against humanity, and we're now reaping the harvest of terrorism that resulted. We need to change our way. We need to do good. We need to send our sons and daughters to other places in the world, not in military uniforms with bombs and machine guns, but rather with the tools necessary to help those in need, no matter what that need might be. We have the knowledge. We have the financial strength to do that. There are hundreds of millions of people around the world who need assistance to help them improve their quality of life. Medical facilities, schools, the basic infrastructure necessary for a society to flourish. That's what we need to be exporting instead of millions of pounds of bombs and ammunition. And I know some of you are going to condemn me for being a, quote, bleeding heart liberal and a do-gooder. Well, have at it if you must. But I believe with all my heart and in my mind that this is the way to true security for us around the world. If we do this, there will come a time when those in the world who now hate us will cease to do so. Or you cannot hate that which brings goodness into your life. I hope I don't sound too simplistic, but I really believe the solution to our terrorism problem is to be just about that simple. Do good. Oh, yes. There are pockets of terrorism around the world that need to be taken care of with violence, if necessary. But the day will come. The day will come if this country becomes all it can be, that we won't have to do that. I have faith. I have faith that that day will come. I'm not of the view of the PNAC people and all that we need to conquer the world and kill a billion Arabs. Certainly not. I hope to God more people have faith in humanity. Theo in Naples, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi. Hi, guys. I guess I wanted to... Well, you reminded me, how do you know that Jesus was a Democrat?
I reminded you of that?
No. Yeah, you reminded me of the question. How do you know that Jesus was a Democrat?
Oh,
good. He rode into Galilee on a donkey.
Good one, Theo.
Yeah, and you know, do unto others as you'd have them do unto you, and what is that? Love thy neighbor as thyself.
Well,
you know, those are pretty powerful ideas, but
they are powerful ideas.
We have a great democracy here, and you know, and we have the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, but we've always had our self-serving, you know, interest to make it great for the people in America. And unfortunately, you know, we've done whatever we could do, you know, if it was dirty politics or not. But also, the world's really complicated. So, you know, like, it's not so black and white. But,
it is not. But, you know, Theo, the time has come on the earth that the earth has shrunk to this point now where we can no longer just think of our own interest. We've got to be aware of every little corner of the earth now.
Well, I wanted to put one idea out really quick, and that was that the idea of a bumper sticker that says something like, George Bush, Al-Qaeda's number one recruiting agent. And that's a response to, you know, I hear a lot of people say, who would you rather have as president, you know? Or who do you think that Bin Laden wants for president? You know, Bush or John Kerry? And I think he wants Bush because, look at what Bush has done, you know, going after Iraq when it was Bin Laden that got us from Afghanistan and taking all our resources and putting them over there. And just the whole black and white, you know, it makes it look like we're just going after Islam and instead of, you know, going directly after, you know, fundamentalist right-wing, you know, Islamists.
You know, Theo, I don't think anybody could have done a better job to fall into Bin Laden's plans of what he wanted out of 9/11. He wanted to light the fuse to the powder keg between the Christian world and the Arab world, and I think it's been done. That's what he wanted. That's what we gave him.
Right, and we've got a fundamentalist Christian president that's into it, and you know, and we've got. He's divided us from our allies, and you know, a lot of accomplishment on Bin Laden's part with Bush as our president.
Well, hey Theo, thanks for your call. Do appreciate it very much.
Okay, thanks.
Going to go to Diana in North Fort Myers.
Yeah, hi. You mean the LCIA, don't you? Where you say Al Qaeda?
Al Qaeda.
Oh, okay. Well, did you watch on the C-SPAN or here the other night? It had on there with John McCain and. Senator Joe Lieberman, they were with the Fiscal Policy Commission. And the actuality of the numbers is we are right now $72 trillion with a T, dollars in debt in this country. That is major, major.
Well, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, and I mean, George Bush, come on, people. When did you ever start a job? That you 8 months later into the job, you hadn't even started it yet. This is his excuse for 911. You know, I mean, when Bremer said on February 26th in his speech, Paul Bremer, his boy himself, told him that he was worried about terrorism. 911 happens in September. Then you get him not knowing anything about it. This happens over there at the Agrabi prison. He doesn't know anything about, you know, he can't even answer questions, simple little questions to the news media. He sits there and stumbles around and like a little child. This is just, I have never seen nothing like this where they pander to such he's like a kindergartner with a bank account.
Oh, I'd be embarrassed if I voted for the guy. I really would.
I believe that people actually want to back this guy up, much less the majority, which is Republican, that gave him the money and just blank checks like they do. And for what? For what? You know, you've got to remember, not just the presidency, but that House and you know, the Congress and the Senate as well. The majority, because they're the ones that have let him put this country $72 trillion into debt. And every day, they're on the air cooking the books, hooking the numbers on the chart system, not the pinnacle, mind you, but the chart system of the stock markets, on the unemployment, on the polls, you name it, they've cooked them all. And yet, we sit here thinking we've still got to... Hey, people, the little teensy countries over in the Congo are not as far off and worse off than we are. We're worse off than anyone else in the world right now.
Well, I doubt if the citizens of any other country in the world have got like a $38,000 per capita debt.
This has been the most major pull down of this country. Like the guy said on there, he was from, I think it was the Cato Institute or something. Anyway, he was talking about, you know, none of them know what to do. Brookings, the major heads of the world don't even know what to do anymore. To get us out of this debt, it's beyond report.
Well, there will come a day of reckoning on that. Diane, thank you so much for your call.
Take care.
Appreciate it. You know, to all my Democratic friends and liberal friends, you know who our favorite Democrat, well, what do you want to call him, Benedict Arnold, is Zell Miller, Democrat from Georgia. I don't know what has happened to Zell Miller in the last few years. I think he's lost his mind. But anyway, I got a kick out of just I just want to give you a quick quote this week. You know, humiliation varies from one culture to another, and I understand from all I've read and been told the last two or three weeks now that sexual humiliation and nakedness and so forth is one of the worst things that can happen to a person of the Muslim faith. Well, it's just something really terrible to him. So that may be hard for you and me to understand. But, oh, Zell Miller, I got a kick out of Zell Miller. I just thought this told a lot about Zell Miller right here. He made a quote, and he says, "The two times I think I may have been most humiliated in my life was standing in a big room." Remember, this is Zell Miller saying this. "Naked as a jaybird with about 50 others, and they were checking us out. Now, that was humiliating." Well, Zell, I don't know. I was on a basketball team, baseball team, track team, and all that stuff in high school, and was often around gangs of naked guys. Why were you so humiliated, Zell? I mean, you're an American, and in our culture here, that's not anything to get all excited about. But why were you so humiliated, Zell? I just wondered. I just wondered if you get my drift. All right. We're going to go to, maybe you don't get my drift. We're going to go to Jeff in Brooklyn. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hey, guy.
Glad to have you along with us today, Jeff.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for promoting that wonderful Granny D piece. I hope people do check it out.
Well, Granny D has an eloquence, an understated eloquence that is so rare.
No question about it. No question about it. We've been trying to keep that positive message alive on the Democratic Underground Board, and people seem to be more concerned with mysterious brown substances and other negative things. So it's nice to have a positive message out there.
Indeed.
Well. How about a poem, since you did the Trillin poem? Can I do a poem?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. "Mr. Bush took a boat from Nantucket, shoveling chum from a bucket. But Truth took a bite, and George cried in fright. Carl, I think it's time to tell them how we have made Iraq safe for democracy and freedom and Tara."
Yeah. I tell you, you're a piece of work. You are a piece of work. That's obviously not in the Calvin Trillion book, obviously, on sales.
My book.
I understand about your book. Your book, what was it you told me recently in an email, that it's amazing what you could do with an hour's worth of time in a rhyming book?
I said, I've probably got about 4 hours of material for the review right now, but we're just going to wheel it down to the best stuff. What else did I have in my mind today?
Well, I don't know.
I said, I thought you had enough callers, so I just kind of was going to take the day off after I did my Granny D. I had my Granny D quote all set up in my computer. I was all ready to go, and oh, he did it. Okay, fine.
You know, we like to take a lot of callers on this show, and I think it makes a good show. You know, you get a diverse amount, you know, a bunch of diverse opinions and so forth. But one thing that's disappointed me lately is our right wing friends have been kind of boycotting calling in the show. Now, I know they listen because we get their hate mail and so forth, and I visit two or three websites where I see them talking back and forth about listening to this show, and yet most of them anymore don't have the courage to call in and state the case that we keep asking them to state for Mr. Bush.
Well, Guy, it comes down to physics. It's very hard to spin set concrete.
Yeah. I'd say you got it right there.
I mean, the stuff, I mean, what's coming out of Iraq these days, and you know, it was a great cartoon. You know, I do political cartoon threads all the time on Democratic Underground, and there was one that I loved. It showed the Pentagon as the head of the rotting fish, and the tail was the Abu Ghraib prison.
Oh, yeah.
And the little voice balloon coming out of the Pentagon saying, "We'll find out why that tail stinks."
Exactly, exactly. I got another poem for you out of the Calvin Trillion book.
Okay.
It says, we talked to Germany and France. We briefed Russians and Chinese. Consulted with Turkey and Japan and then did as we pleased. So that's kind of sums it up. When we went into Iraq over there, we did put our finger in the eye of the world community and said, to hell with you. We don't care what you think. So,
I say just a little capping note on what the Granny D pointed out, that, you know, don't let these polls get you down. They're just not polling the populace. You can't find anyone outside of, you know, just people that have long since lost their mind and never voted their brain. It's going to be, that great quote, you know, expect a landslide, but don't stop working for it.
That's right. That's right. I'm not going to predict a landslide, but I am going to predict a victory. That's for certain. I most certainly am. Jeff, thanks for your call.
You're welcome, guy.
Appreciate it so very much.
Take care.
We're going to go to Bob in Cape Coral. Bob, welcome to the program.
Hey, guy. Great show today. Really, really enjoying it. Guy, just a little worried there about Kerry, though. He doesn't seem to be coming out against the war. Do you think he really needs to come out against the war? I think he should.
I don't really, you know, if I'm thinking about this from a political strategist point of view, I don't think he needs to do anything right now. You know, there's that old saying, perhaps in jest, but, you know, if your opponent's committing suicide, don't do anything to help him, to save him. So, you know, I it appears to me that not only is Bush committing political suicide, it appears that there is dissension in the ranks now. It appears that behind the scenes in the Republican-held Congress, in the House and the Senate, that there's a lot of grumbling going on. And I'm not so sure I disagree with some of what the Kerry campaign's doing right now, just kind of laying low.
Yeah, you saw what happened this week, too, with DeLay, what he said about McCain. He made a joke at McCain's a Republican. That can't be helping.
Oh, Dennis Hastert.
Hastert, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Hastert.
Yeah.
That can't be helping the party.
No, it can't. And of course, Trent Lott, he made a statement yesterday or day before, pretty much dissing the administration. They're starting to put some distance between his policy and themselves, even a lot of guys that voted for this. And you know, if I'm going to be perfectly honest here, when the primary started, many of you heard me say, and I'll fess right up to it, you know, you could find it in the archives of the show anyway, I just about did everything but swear that I would never vote for anybody that voted for this war. And we had a couple of candidates at the time. We had Bob Graham and Dennis Kucinich that did not vote for the war. And I thought, well, you know, I'll go with that. But John Kerry did vote for this war. Now, he claims he was deceived. Everybody that voted for it claimed they were deceived, and maybe they were. I'm not happy about the new leader of the Democratic Party claiming to be deceived, but I'm just going to have to go with his word on it.
Exactly. And didn't the Republicans come to power back in? When did they actually take the House and the Senate? Was that 92?
Actually, they really rolled in 96.
96.
Yeah.
But I remember back in 92 when Perot ran against Perot got so many numbers, but the budget deficit was so huge. And now the budget deficit back then seems like a pittance compared to what it is now.
Right.
And I just, with the Republicans, and that's where I think the riff is going to come. They realize that the bill is going to have to be paid sooner or later, and I think that they're going to stop all these tax cuts, and they're going to realize that they have to pay the piper.
Well, the people on the conservative side of things really fascinate me right now because, hell, I'll just say it. I'm more conservative than the Bush administration. These people, you know, they've been drunken sailors buying bottles of wine and drinking. You know, it's crazy the way they've spent money. And, you know, this new worthless Medicare bill that they passed, they lied about that, the cost of it, hid the cost of it from everybody. And now we're finding out that these, you know, these Medicare drug cards that are being passed out are just a joke.
Yeah, you know what it is, guy? I don't think that these people that are in power right now are actually conservatives. They're beyond that. They're fanatical. Because did you see the piece on Frontline the other night about the evangelical part of the party there, how they won in Texas, and and he guided his father to help get elected in 1988. Did you see that frontline piece?
Yeah, and then you've got this why is the name escaping? Robert Upton. He's a minister. He's a head of the kind of like a leading guy in the Pentecostal movement, and he actually had a meeting. And of course, in this modern day and age, it's leaked out and memos have been seen. He had a meeting recently with Elliot Abrams, one of the criminals from the Iran-Contra scandal. And believe it or not, this administration was speaking with this Robert Upton, this minister, about the the rapture and Armageddon. And here we have an administration talking about the rapture and the Armageddon and the Jewish problem and the Palestinian problems all wrapped into one, and a Pentecostal minister sitting in us being assured that they weren't going to do anything to interfere with Christ coming back to earth. And I'm thinking, wait a minute.
This is scary.
Why?
And that's how they got elected in Texas, when he saw that. On the piece it said, as long as we can get 85 to 90% of the evangelical, I'm sorry, I troubled that word, to come out and vote, we can actually win the election in Texas. Now I'm worried that this is what happened in this country in 2000. I mean, we need to all get out there and make sure that doesn't happen again this year.
Well, I think even some of those folks are going to drop off this wild neocon side this time. I really do. I think people are going to wake up a little bit. Some of them. I mean, we're still going to lose most of the South. There's no doubt about that. And that's where that hardcore fundamental Christian right-wing thing has come from. It's from the South. But in the battleground states, I think we're looking good. I do. I've got all the confidence in the world right now. I think, as I've said before, that John Kerry's going to win this election. I don't even have to pass out specifics on it, because John Kerry's going to win this because simply he's a better man.
Guy, why do you think that they're going to drop out? Why do you think that those people are going to come over to the Democratic side?
I just think some of them have to take a look at the golden rule and forget that the neocons are looking at the abortion issue and stem cell research and all that. I think the realization that you can't form your political opinion on one or two small, two issues like that, to perhaps allow the power of our United States government to be concentrated in the hands of some radicals over just a couple of issues. I think people are going to get wise to that. I certainly hope so.
I pray that you're right. I really do.
Thanks so much for your call, Bob. I do appreciate it. Well, for all my friends right now in the area, I want to talk about some friends of ours. I saw these folks today. The McIntosh Bookstore. You know, there's nothing like a neighborhood bookstore, and some of the big guys tried to recreate them or to minimize them, and even the Internet tries desperately to create a virtual copy, but neither comes close. One of our favorites is the oldest bookstore on Sanibel Island, the McIntosh Bookstore. That's a good name for a bookstore, don't you think? And it's a genuine old-fashioned neighborhood bookstore, a store that in too many towns is now only part of the museum's historic town exhibit. But on Sanibel Island, it's a real, thriving, not virtual, a flesh-and-blood store. McIntosh is operated by Jim Dolling, a lifetime student of literature and a young fellow who is as unique as the store itself. The first step inside tells you this is someplace special. Maybe it's the aroma of the old wooden floors and the first edition books, or maybe it's the wide variety of titles and subjects to choose from. And also nestled on those old shelves are the latest books on both sides of the political debate, and one can find authors of current progressive writings as well as those of the other side of the fence. They're very fair at McIntosh. Currently, for our listeners, they're carrying Molly Ivins and Al Franken and Michael Moore and Jim Hightower and Ambassador Wilson's new book and Mr. Bob Woodward's new book. They're all there. And there's also bestsellers for easy summer reading, children's books, gifts and cards, and McIntosh is the place for books on nature, birding, and shelling, popular hobbies in this area. And when you can't find it anywhere else, you can usually get it at McIntosh, and you can order online at www.sanibelbooks.com. Stop by. Even if you don't buy anything, you're always welcome to come in and take a look at a real bookstore That's the McIntosh Bookstore at 2365 Periwinkle Way on Sanibel Island, Florida. All of our friends around the country, if you've never been to Sanibel Island, you really need to come and take a look. Kind of want to play a little piece for you.
ReDefeatBush.com presents ReDefeat Bush Theater.
Okay, let's give a big welcome to President George W. Bush for this special parody edition of Jeopardy!
Thank you. Glad to be here.
No, thank you, Mr. President. Okay, let's get started. What category do you want to start out with?
Let's see. I'll take Managing Advanced Industrial Capitalism for $1 trillion.
Oh, Mr. President, are you sure you want to start there? That's a very challenging category.
Yeah, sure. Hit me. Dick is here in case I get stuck.
Hello.
Okay, this tool for economic stimulation works by accelerating consumer demand.
Dick?
Mr. President, the answer is, what are tax cuts?
I'm afraid that's right.
I knew that one.
That's okay, Mr. President. You're still in the game. And what do you want to tackle next?
I'm going to stick with managing advanced industrial capitalism for $2 trillion this time.
Good. And the answer is, this is both the leading cause of the decline in tax revenues and of the massive federal budget deficits as far as the eye can see.
Oh, wait. I know. What is 9/11?
No, I'm sorry. The answer is, what are tax cuts? What are tax cuts?
Oh, darn it.
Mr. President, you missed the first two in this category. Do you want to switch to something else?
No. Hit me again, this time for $3 trillion.
The answer is, how one political party with a very narrow base can provide incentives to its clients in the military contracting, energy, drug, and other industries and get a huge financial advantage over the other party.
Gee, I don't know. What is space travel to Mars?
No. The question was, what are tax cuts? What are tax cuts?
Oh, tax cuts can't be the answer to everything.
Mr. President, you are right. Tax cuts cannot be the answer to everything. Johnny, tell the president what he's won.
An all-expense-paid one-way trip back to Crawford, Texas. And best of luck to you in your new role as our country's most recent former president named Bush.
That was another installment of ReDefeatBush.com's ReDefeat Bush Theater. If you want to help throw the bum out, join us on the internet at ReDefeatBush.com and sign up.
All right. That's like going to the movies and seeing the newsreels. Remember that? How many of you, I look in at Jeff and Biz here. They don't know what I'm talking about when I talk about newsreels at the movie. You see Jeff and Biz. We used to go to the movies, and there would always be a double feature. And in between the two movies, they would have newsreels. And instead of watching CNN and all that during the week, well, they would have these newsreels and show the news that happened all week long. And it was a big deal. I know they're still looking at me funny. They can't believe such a thing ever existed. They can't believe we were ever that primitive. Well, we were. Lowell Thomas. Remember, how many of you remember Lowell Thomas? My word, I'm digging way back on that. Hey, we've got a caller on the line, and by the way, you can call us at 888-602-7500, 7501, 020304, and locally at 479-5540, and we're still looking for somebody to call in and give us their unabashed support of Mr. George W. Bush, and why. Maybe, are you going to do that, John? Okay.
Well, you know, I'm calling because a friend of mine got a letter from George Bush's campaign fundraising arm signed by George Bush.
Hey.
And he wanted to read some of it to me because it was such a chuckle. And I don't know if you can get a hold of this. It's a four-page letter. You might find it good material for next week. But as he read this letter to me, first of all, I thanked him for his valued support, which he's trying to figure out where they figure he supported the president because he hasn't. And then as he read through this letter, different pages of the promises and the reasons you should donate and so forth, he got to the near the end of the letter. And, of course, if we let Kerry get elected, you'll have Hillary Clinton and all these different people they named in this letter, taxing and spending on social programs and health care and just all sorts of things, implying that this would be bad. And then, of course, it's sincerely and signed by the president. But then there's a P.S., on it, which I can't remember what that involved, but I thought when he got to the P.S. on a four-page letter, it sounded like people who call in talk shows, and then when you thank them for their call, they have a P.S. They continue to go on and reiterate what they've already said.
Sure.
But one he read this letter and got to the part about what the Democrats might do if they got in, I thought, you know, and I told him, take that envelope and put a note in there that I've read your letter, and I think I'm going to be better off with the Democrats and their programs than I am with your programs of going to war, erasing a surplus that we had, increasing a debt to God knows what, because this mess in Iran, Iraq isn't over. And if I ever get one of those letters myself, that's what I'm going to do is put a note in there that I'm going to make my donation to the other party.
They I can only hope to get one of those.
Yeah, they even went, maybe this was in the PS, that if you put a 37-cent stamp on this envelope, it'll save them postage. This was a postage-paid envelope.
Ah.
And, of course, I'll definitely send it back without a stamp, just to cost them money. I don't know why the Republicans have accepted what is going on here. It's an embarrassment to their party. It's an embarrassment to the country. What is going on is not right. It's not Christian. It's not anything that the Republicans were telling me they were going to be when they were criticizing Bill Clinton, who certainly was good for criticism.
Sure.
But where are the promises or the better that these Republicans were going to do for us?
You know, when you go back over that age-old question, are you better off now than you were nearly 4 years ago? Anybody, almost anybody, I mean, unless you're one of the extreme fat cats and you know, have had a great amount of financial success on account of these tax cuts and so forth, just about everybody in so many categories has got to say no.
Well, you know, when Les Humble was on the air here, and that's been over a year and a half ago, when we were just not even involved in a war there yet, I came on the air in our local shows, and several other people did. This Ahmed Chalabi, who's the government is finally admitting, gave him phony information.
Yeah.
I and many other people were saying that this man was feeding him a load of bull up there, and they shouldn't be basing going to war on any information this guy was giving. And here we are. Now, if I could figure it out, why don't the people up there that we elect figure it out?
Oh, you know, Chalabi, he was the darling of the neocons, and you know, especially among the neocon movement people, he was touted as and folks, we're not kidding about this, as the George Washington of Iraq.
Exactly. And this man was a bank swindler. He has warrants out for his arrest in every Arab country he would have to deal with if he were president of Iraq.
And he shoved it right in our faces when it started coming out that everything, this load of bull that you said he passed off, when it started coming to light that all of it was bunk and bull, he pretty much said, and I'm paraphrasing, but I think I have it pretty close, okay, we were wrong, but Saddam's gone, so what?
Mm-hmm. And I would have to say, with so many of our troops stretched so thin around the world as they are, our National Guard, I don't know what the percentage is, it's, I thought 40% of the people over in Iraq were National Guardsmen, but they say that they've called up at least half our National Guard. Who's left here to guard us? This country is so vulnerable to our enemies right now. It would have been much better to just talk and talk that we are the best and we're the biggest and we're the toughest, rather than get involved and then show your weaknesses. Fortunately, I think we're a strong nation, our troops are strong, we'll be able to fend off some attacks, but it certainly opens us up to people who think, well, now the America is weak and they can attack us. I hope I'm here in 50 years to read the history of this president, because he's going to be shown by history to be the worst president this country has ever had. And I don't know why the Republican Party and the Republican people in office up there went as far as he did with this man.
Oh, you know, I couldn't agree more. And you know, John, it's got nothing to do with partisanship right now. I feel our country is in so much jeopardy that if we had a strong Republican, this guy isn't a Republican, but if we had a strong Republican president that was doing the right thing and we were prospering, if I felt safer, if I thought, you know, all the security stuff had been done to protect us and all, I'd be more than happy to say, hey, let's elect him again. He's doing a good job. I mean, I'd be happy to.
Well, I watched him walk in with his Republican buddies yesterday, the other day, to go talk to them, and he's got that grin on his face, and I'm thinking, doesn't this man realize how serious a situation he has this country in? I just don't believe he does. And the mere fact that he can't form a coalition to go in the first place and then a coalition to get out of this thing shows you that we need somebody else in there. Yeah. I had a Republican Party person call me the other day asking a question, and I told her, you know what I'd like to see? I'd like to see at these conventions both parties bring in new people, nominate new people right off the bat, and let's just start all over from scratch. Now, I like Kerry. I think the other nations would work with him and all that, but really, let's just both parties get some new people in there that we can work with and get this man out of there. He just can't get cooperation from anybody except the people they've misled in this country.
Well, the only way they've been able to get any cooperation is to beat people over the head or coerce them with money.
Well, and tell them lies and the propaganda here. I mean, you know, I heard this mic call in at the beginning of the show, and because they found one shell with these old chemicals in it, that's our weapon of mass destruction. That is not a reason enough to put this country at risk, going into that country, spending billions of dollars, and we're building roads that are blowing up, and schools, and...
And how many, you know, John, to go a little further with that thought of yours, I wonder how many American people know this. You know, Bush is talking about, well, we know we're going to turn this country back over to give the sovereignty back to the people of Iraq and so forth. How many of you listening right now know that we are building currently 14 military bases in the country of Iraq? 14 military bases. Does that sound like we're going to turn sovereignty over and get out of Iraq?
Not to me. And if you had to pay for this as you go, your tax bill would be 70% of your income.
Oh, boy.
Thank you so much, guys. It's been a beautiful show.
Thank you very much for calling. You know, no show would be complete without talking about our good friend Dick Cheney. You know how I love Dick Cheney. And, rare Dick Cheney. I read some things that Dick Cheney talked about this week, and I got to tell you, I read these things, and then I have to read them again because I'm going like, oh my God! If I was a drinking man, I'd say I had too much to drink, and perhaps I misunderstood or something. But then I go back and read it again, and say, no, he actually did say this. Dick Cheney this week touts Fox News as the pinnacle of accuracy. Yes, sir. Last month, The Washington Post reported Cheney, and I quote, Cheney endorsed the Fox News channel during a conference call with tens of thousands of Republicans. Although it's unusual for a president or vice president to single out a commercial enterprise for public praise, Cheney said, I end up spending a lot of time watching Fox News, quote, because they're more accurate. They're more accurate than other media. Of course, a University of Maryland poll last year found that Fox viewers were so far out of it, they're far more likely than viewers of any other network to have at least one big misconception about the war. 80% had one big inaccuracy they learned off of Fox as compared to only 23% from PBS viewers. And then that wasn't good enough for Cheney. He had to go a little further. Dick Cheney touts Walmart as pinnacle, the pinnacle of American economy. In a visit to Arkansas, Cheney cited Walmart as, quote, one of our nation's best companies. Now, if this doesn't give you an insight into the workings of a mind, I was going to say evil mind, I decided not to, but no, yes, an evil mind. If this doesn't give you a insight into that, I don't know what does. Cheney cites Walmart as one of our nation's best companies and claimed that the story of Walmart exemplifies some of the very best qualities in our country. Hard work, the spirit of enterprise, fair dealing, and last but not least, integrity. Cheney didn't mention that Walmart pays its workers poverty-level wages. They regularly violate environmental laws. They provide such paltry health care benefits that many of its workers are forced to rely upon public assistance. Meanwhile, according to a study by the House Education and Workforce Committee in the last few years, well over 100 unfair labor practice charges have been lodged against Walmart throughout the country, with 43 charges filed in 2002 alone. And since 1995, the U.S. government has been forced to issue at least 60 complaints against Walmart at the National Labor Relations Board. Walmart's labor law violations range from illegally firing workers who attempt to organize a union, to locking workers into the workplaces, to illegal doctoring of hourly employees' time records, to skimp on its already minuscule wages. Instead of noting this sordid record, Cheney said the problem was not Walmart, but pesky workers who dare to challenge the behemoth's behavior. He said the answer is litigation reform. So in other words, these people from Walmart, they're dumber than hell, and they don't know what they're talking about. They're trying to take advantage of poor old Walmart, and so we need litigation reform. It's those lawyers causing all the problem, and they want he wants them. And then earlier this year, I'm talking about Mr. Cheney again. He made a claim, as you remember, that Saddam and Al Qaeda were linked. He made the claim despite the fact that the Department of Defense had already dismissed the conclusion of the article as inaccurate and had condemned the leak of classified information as illegal. When asked about this by Senator Carl Levin at a hearing, CIA Director George Tenet said that harsh criticism of Cheney's statement was a fair point, and I'll talk to Dick Cheney about it. Well, I'll just bet he did. And I know. That all sounds ridiculous about Cheney praising Walmart and Cheney being so nice about Fox News. But I just have to have one more for you, as long as Dick Cheney's at it. In the midst of an SEC investigation into its irregular accounting practices that may have bilked employees, Cheney gave a speech to tout Halliburton. Okay. He said, "I have great affection and respect for Halliburton. It's a fine company, and I'm pleased that I was associated with this company." Well, Dick, I got to tell you, Halliburton's damn glad they were associated with you, because they robbed the piggy bank the whole time you were with them, and they're still doing it. He says, Halliburton gets unfairly maligned simply because of their past association with me. Even as Halliburton was itself admitting that it accepted $6 million in kickbacks in its no-bid contract work in Iraq. And the Pentagon, of course, cited the company for serving American troops in Iraq unsanitary food. And finally, he claimed, "I severed my ties with Halliburton when I became a candidate for vice president in August of 2000, even though he still receives about $150,000 a year from the company and owns more than 433,000 yet to be exercised Halliburton stock options that the Congressional Research Service said represent a continuing financial interest and potential conflict of interest." Now, I know that we've made fun of Dan Quayle as vice president. We've made fun of what was his name? Spiro Agnew as vice president. Some of you Republicans have made fun of Al Gore as vice president. Some of you back during the Eisenhower days made fun of Richard Nixon as vice president, about how Eisenhower didn't think he was very smart and very. But oh my God, this Dick Cheney, if he doesn't take the cake, I don't know who would. This guy. I got to stop talking about Dick Cheney. It gets my blood pressure up. It really does. You know, I start talking about a guy like him, and I have nightmares. I wonder, can it be that a guy like that's really made his way to the vice presidency of the United States? And then we had the what I call the outrage of the week, and it doesn't even involve a Democrat. House Speaker Dennis Hastert, fool that he is, lectured John McCain this week. As you know, he's a senator from Arizona, a former POW who was awarded the Silver Star, the Bronze Star, the Legion of Merit, Purple Heart, and Distinguished Flying Cross. Dennis Hastert lectured John McCain on the meaning of sacrifice. sacrificed during war because McCain doesn't fully support Bush's tax cuts. Man, I'll tell you, that takes a lot of nerve. That takes a lot of nerve. John McCain, how could you? Dennis, how could you? How could you? Well, I know how you could, because you're part of the most incompetent, corrupt, worst administration in history. You're part of the cabal that's running Washington right now, even though the Bush administration uses you, Mr. Hastert, as just a whipping boy. You're just their gopher. That's all you are. That's all you've ever been. That's why you've got that job right now. And that's why Bill Frist is the Senate Majority Leader, because he's just Bush's lackey. That's all. That's all he is. So if that's all the respect you guys have for yourself, well, go ahead. If you, you know. Hey, you know, I want to thank you for listening to the program today. I do appreciate it so very much. I do want you to remember we're a listener-supported program. You can donate to the program on PayPal, www.theguyjamesshow.com. We appreciate your emails, your letters. We love to hear from you, and we appreciate most of all your participation in our program. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. Thanks for listening to The Guy James Show.
Guy James Show is the cooperative effort of a talented and dedicated staff. Executive producer, Gene Charles. Research director, Michael Merritt. Production manager, Frank Princeton. Program coordinator, Martha Simon. We thank the staff for their continued dedication, and we thank you, the listeners, for your interest in our show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. This has been The Guy James Show.
The news is next. This is WPTK Pine Island Center, the station for Power Talk. Power Talk 1200.
Picking up the pieces in Bradgate, Iowa. I'm Joan Bennett. Nearly all 50 homes in the tiny Iowa town were trashed by last